This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, the one and only Marcus Vandenberg. What's going on, Brother Marcus?
What's up, Nathan?
Not much, man. It's another week, another episode of the Kings of Sport. It seems like a long time since we last spoke, but it was just 7 days ago. And how's your week been since we last talked?
Very long. as you know, the baseball playoffs are in full swing. And because of some schedule shuffling around, I've been working... Or I'm on a stretch of 8 days straight, which normally it's not the end of the world, but when it's 8 days of playoff baseball, it becomes, even though I love baseball to death, it becomes draining. It drains on you. So I am glad that two of the series are wrapped up. I am hoping at least one more gets wrapped up and the Dodgers somehow stretch it to 5 games. But yeah, it's been a long week. How about yourself?
Yeah, my week's been pretty good. There's been a lot of... shakeups at work. I might have touched on this either last week or the week before when I did the show solo, but yeah, everything's kind of settling into a groove at work. And you know, I will say this, a bit of advice to everyone out there in the workforce. You know, people always tell you to be good and give 110%. Sometimes the most important thing is just showing up to work, because then, you know, everybody else is screwing up around you. And if you are just consistent and show up to work and do your job, by nature of just that, you become elevated. So,
and people are not showing up to work now?
Oh, man. We got, I'd say in the last 2 weeks, we probably crossed 5 people off of the schedule.
Wow.
Either quitting or getting fired, or, you know, our general manager quit. So, yeah, it's like, you know, just playing my position, just you know, knowing my role. I've already moved up a couple steps in the line, so.
And how quickly do you guys replace people after they've been let go?
It takes about a week or so, because okay. we gotta go through an interview, and you know, we don't really do the extensive background checks, which is kind of the biggest myth. Like, I don't understand why it's even done, Marcus, because unless you're at a job like a bank or, you know, something where you're dealing with security. You know, how many times has somebody actually checked your references? I mean, maybe it's different for you because you're dealing with media and you're dealing with journalism. But in terms of just a regular 9-to-5, like, I don't see many times where somebody's like, let me see. We're going to see if this guy can work at Best Buy. So let me call Walmart and see if he was a model employee.
References, not so much, but background check, they definitely do. And they will definitely check to verify employment. So they'll call previous employers to verify that what I've listed in terms of the date range is accurate. So that does happen. But usually references, I'll hear from my reference, and they'll usually give me a heads up and say, you know, so-and-so has contacted me about a position. But usually it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, I think that's just because you're black, though.
But they don't know I'm black half the time. It's based on my last name. What am I? I'm not black. Yeah,
you're straight up surprising these people. You're like, they expected some European that walk through the door and they're like, who is this light-skinned Elder Barge-looking brother?
Wei Ting posted a story a couple weeks ago about a guy, a Hispanic guy, who was looking for jobs, and I think his name was, might have been Jose or something like that, and he changed his name to a more quote-unquote American name, and all of a sudden he got all these inquiries from jobs. And I posted,
yeah,
I was
he went
like,
from Jose to Joe.
Yeah, he went from Jose to Joe, and he got all these responses. And I was like, I can only imagine how many internships and callbacks I got just based on my name alone. If my name was like Daquan Vanderbilt, I'm pretty sure, despite what's on my resume, some of those calls might not have happened. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that people still act that way and think that way, but I think it still happens.
Yeah, if your name was DeBrickashaw Vandenberg, I don't know.
Yeah, I better be good at football.
Let's talk about this real quick before we get into this baseball market, because this is something that has been intriguing me for a while, and I've never asked you in the course of our friendship, so mm-hmm. I'm just going to do it on the podcast. What is your ancestry? Like, what's up with the Vandenberg, man? Like what is your makeup?
I should know this question because my dad sent me the information. Let me see if I can find the email real quick. How about we tease this for a week?
Yeah, so that'll be our tease for next week. Tune in next week to the Kings of Sport podcast and find out the secret origins of Marcus Vandenberg.
I do have the information somewhere. It's in my email, but I can't tell you offhand. For the longest time, I thought it was Dutch, and then found out it's not Dutch. So
is that why you went to Hofstra? You're like, I'm gonna find out my ancestry at Hofstra.
Yeah.
And Rick Smith is like, no, no,
no, no, no.
But let's get into some baseball markets. Like we said, it's been a long week, and it's so crazy because as slow as sometimes people think the game of baseball is, and sometimes in actuality it is, we've had a lot of action over the past 7 days. And, you know, let's kind of backtrack before we look ahead. What did you think about that wild card game between Oakland and Kansas City where the Royals pulled out a 9-8 victory in 12 innings? One of the best games I've ever seen. I went on Twitter immediately afterwards, and it was like, it gave me memories of that World Series game with the Cards and the Rangers that one year.
Oh, the game sits where they came back. And Yeah. Yeah, it was easily the best baseball game I've watched all season long. It was a great exhibition for small ball from both sides in terms of seeing a lot of sacrificed bunts, a lot of stolen bases. I mean, that's sort of Kansas City's mantra at the moment, is that they're a team that is not afraid to steal second and third or bunt runners over because they don't have the power that other teams in the playoffs have. So they're not afraid to do sort of a more National League style of play. It was a great game. I guess sucks if you're an Oakland fan because you've basically have traded away your best outfielder and power hitter in Cespedes for a guy in John Lester who could end up being just a rental because they now have to sign this guy. And, you know, Oakland's history in terms of spending money is not ideal in terms of a guy. I just can't see Oakland signing a check for $150 million to keep this guy. So, you know, if they do lose Lester, then you're talking about what? You traded your best hitter for a rental when you already had a guy, Jeff Samardzija, you traded for. So, you know, Billy Bean, for a guy who gets all this credit for being a quote-unquote baseball genius, he really fucked up. And I'm not sure if it's going to cost him his job, but, you know, that it's really a disappointment that Oakland went out the way it did.
Yeah, and, you know, no disrespect to Billy Bean, but he's been coasting on this Moneyball thing for a while. And Oakland has not, you know, they've been in the postseason, but, you know, it's been more of the same result. You know, it's been eliminations early, eliminations in wild card games. It's been losing to teams that you should, on paper, beat. And sooner or later, the buck has got to stop with Billy Bean, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for back-to-back years, they couldn't get past Detroit. And then they built this team essentially to compete with Detroit in terms of having these great pitchers, and they can't get past the wild card game. So I'm not
you got beat by Ned Yost, man. Look in the mirror and think about that.
Now, I mean, just to compare it to what happened to Detroit, you have a Detroit team who had the last three Cy Young winners on their rotation and couldn't win a game against Baltimore. So I'm not sure what's more of a disappointment, Oakland not getting past Ned Yost in Kansas City or Detroit not winning a game against Baltimore if they're pitching.
Well, you know, if they had Prince Fielder, they might have been able to do something.
You mean the guy who's been out all season with a neck injury? That guy?
Hey, he was just resting up for the postseason, man.
No. That was still a great deal for them.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, man, that game was just fun. It was fun. You had I don't remember the guy's name, but the kid that stole the base and then was doing the motorcycle.
Dry Dyson.
Oh, man. And, like, for an American League wild card game, and you mentioned it, Marcus, you alluded to it, you know, they played the small ball. It was like watching, you know, 1988 National League games.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of, you know, we're going to go for the sacrifices. We're going to steal bases. We're going to manufacture runs, not just, you know, let's wait for the long ball, which is what you see a lot of times in the American League these days.
They're a very interesting team because you mentioned Dry Dyson, who is a fourth outfielder who is known for his speed, and he's sort of been that guy who will come on late in games as a defensive replacement, and he'll come in and steal bases. But not only do they have this guy, they brought up a guy, Terrence Dorr, from the minor leagues, who is a lifetime 237 hitter in the minor leagues, but he's super fast, and they called him up essentially just to be a pinch runner. And we saw him in the wild card game against Oakland, and a couple times during the playoffs against the Angels, where he came in and just, you know, first pitch would take off and steal bases. And have you seen the motto they've sort of adopted in Kansas City now?
No.
They have a motto going around that says, that's what speed do. And I'm pretty sure they stole it from Mark Henry's That's What I Do. So there's your wrestling connection to the Kansas City Royals.
That's what speed do. Huh. I like that. Let's flip over to the other wild card game, which... Man, this would hurt my heart. Because once again, you know, we've talked about this a couple times on this program, Marcus. In my estimation, one of the most exciting players in the game and arguably one of the best players in the game is Andrew McCutchen. But unless you follow the game, you really wouldn't know about it because A, MLB really doesn't do a lot to promote the guy. But B, he plays for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the Pirates got mollyhopped by the San Francisco Giants. 8-0, and you know that. Thanks for playing, guys. Thanks for stopping by.
And this is why I don't like the one game wild card situation, because the Pirates decided to go for the division, and they tossed out their best pitchers in Gerrit Cole before the wild card game. So they were stuck going with Edison Volquez, a guy who a year ago was picked up by the Dodgers after he was waived by the Padres. So that really pretty much tells you all you need to know about Edison Volquez. And he had the task of going against Madison Bumgarner, one of the top left-handers in baseball. And the Giants shut him down. So yeah, while I get there's excitement and, you know, you have this one-game drama, it sort of puts teams at a disadvantage. And it's not a fair. You played 162 games, and for it to come down to one game doesn't really seem fair.
So you're saying the light bulb didn't go off for Edison?
Same. There you go.
Let's play it forward. We're going to bypass the National League series because by the time you're hearing this, it'll probably be completely different than the analysis Marcus and I will give you. And we're not about... making ourselves look stupid. We're not about that life. So instead, let's talk about a series we can talk about, and that's the ALCS. In the ALDS, the Royals beat up on your Angels, man.
Not my Angels.
I thought you repped for the Angels. You just
no, Dodgers. Yeah.
Okay. The Royals whooped up on the Angels, and the Orioles, like we mentioned earlier, whooped up on the Tigers, and now you've got this. Talk about a throwback series. You got an ALCS featuring the Baltimore Orioles and the Kansas City Royals. Like, is Cal Ripken and George Brett coming out the locker room?
Man, this is like RBI baseball over again. just screams the 80s.
Oh, man, yes, yes. So, obviously, for those that know me and know my family, my father is a lifelong Orioles fan. I'm a somewhat Orioles fan. I mean, they're my American League team. I'm a Braves fan through and through. But, you know, I got love for the Orioles. And this is an interesting series to me because I didn't think the Orioles were going to get past Detroit. It honestly surprised me, and I don't think anybody thought the Royals were going to get past the Angels, at least not in the fashion that they did. And now you've got these two Cinderella stories, and I'm wondering, Marcus, at the end of the day, when that clock strikes midnight, who's going to be left at the ball?
I thought not from day one, but from September on, that Baltimore had a great shot at making the World Series because they've just seemed to been on this run, and despite
even
losing,
after the Chris Davis deal.
Oh, yeah. Because they even after Davis went out, they kept hitting, and they kept winning. How they kept doing it, I don't know. When you consider Chris Davis is out, Manny Machado is out, that's two of their top hitters in the lineup are gone. You got a guy, Nelson Cruz, who was caught up in the PED incident, and he was suspended last year. He all of a sudden has come back. He led the majors in home runs after. Remember, Nelson Cruz was a guy who was unemployed up until almost spring training, and Baltimore signed him, I believe, on just a one-year deal and took a flyer on him, and he turned out being, you know, leading the league in home runs. So I think they have enough pitching to get to the World Series, and I think it's going to come down to you're going to see the difference between a Baltimore lineup that can really hit and hit it with some power compared to Kansas City that needs to really manufacture runs. And yeah, Kansas City did have some moments against the Angels where they did flash some power. Mike Moustakas hit a couple home runs. Eric Hosmer hit a couple big home runs for them. But I think it's going to come down to power being the difference, and I think Baltimore will advance the World Series.
I'd like to see that, but I mean, wouldn't you have said that in the divisional series with the Angels? Like, didn't they have the power edge on Kansas City and they couldn't get it done?
They did, but they were a bit of a flawed team coming in because they also had some injury issues. I mean, you lost your best pitcher in Garrett Richards. They had a situation where, on their offensive side, Josh Hamilton has been awful. He went hitless in that series against Kansas City. Mike Trout had a couple home runs, but he wasn't sort of Mike Trout. And, you know, that game three, C.J. Wilson couldn't get out the first inning. And C.J. Wilson is someone who, prior to the playoffs, he had a start against Oakland, a similar start where he couldn't make it out the first inning. And, you know, when you're relying on a guy like T.J. Wilson as your third start in a must-win situation and he can't make it out the first, that pretty much sums up Anaheim's issues with pitching. So, yes, I was surprised Kansas City won the series, but, you know, despite having the best record in baseball, the Angels had their issues.
I agree, and I would like to see the O's make it to the World Series. If we do, I might have to holler at Pops and have Pops come on the show and talk about his team. But, you know, just in terms of the ALCS, which kicks off on Friday, you got the O's and the Royals. Who you got and in how many games?
I have the O's winning in six.
O's in six. I like the O's. I'm not going to say in six. The 2-3-2 is what's getting me because we saw in that wild card game, man, the fans of Kansas City can get crunk. Mm-hmm. They can get turned up. And I think the team, especially when you got a team that works with stolen bases, works with, you know, bunting runners over and you know, just playing small ball, they can feed off of that. You know, I saw that with the Braves for a lot of years when they didn't really have, you know, outside of, you know, Dave Justice or Ron Gant once in a blue moon, they didn't have a lot of, you know, 40 home run guys on those Braves teams. It was stolen bases. It was defense. It was taking advantage of things. But then again, as a Braves fan, I can see how that type of play can get you into trouble when you got a, I don't know why I was just about to take a shot at Lonnie Smith. Like, I thought I'd be over this by now, Marcus.
Let it go, man. It's been 20-plus years.
Oh, man. No, man, Lonnie Smith is banned from the Kings of Sport. I put that proclamation down. We'll have Otis Nixon on before Lonnie Smith, and he smoked rocks. But I'm going to say it goes seven, Marcus. I'm going to go seven games, and I think Baltimore's going to win, though.
Okay.
So we both got the Orioles. Be interesting. Like I'm look. I hope we can get a just living in the part of the country that I do. I'd like to see a Beltway series if the Nationals can find a way to make it out of the National League. That would be interesting to me. I really don't want to see the Dodgers in there as much as you would love that. And I hate the St. Louis Cardinals.
I hate like, St. Louis after this series.
Like St. Louis is like if there's a team I hate. I don't hate them as much as I hate the Yankees, but they'd be the team right. They'd be the number two team that I hate the most in baseball is the St. Louis Cardinals. So anybody but the Cardinals against the Orioles would be my dream World Series.
And if you want to know why I hate the Cardinals, there's a bunch of reasons. But one of them was check out Deadspin. There's a story on Tuesday about a protest that was interrupted by Cardinals fans in Ferguson. So, That's all you need to know about the Cardinals is, So check that out on Deadspin.
This just happened.
This happened, I believe, Monday night.
Wow. Okay. Was that the same? Wasn't it over the weekend where the thing happened at the Opera House or whatever it was?
Yeah, that was over the weekend.
Where the banner was unfurled. Wow. Yeah. Don't forget about St. Louis, folks, or Ferguson. People, you know, just because it's not the topic of conversation and Don Lemon isn't out in the streets talking to the people, like, it's still going on, man. It's still real. But yeah, I think that'll do it for segment one, Marcus. It felt good to talk about baseball for once, man. Just lead off with baseball. Like, this, if we're going to talk about it, October is the month.
Yeah, we have two more weeks of baseball talk, and then we're done until. What, April?
So is this like we talk about baseball, like leading into the All-Star game, maybe the opening day and in October. That's it.
So enjoy while it lasts, people.
Yeah. Actually, I do hope. You know what? I changed my mind, Marcus. I hope we get Orioles and Dodgers. Because I know
you want to make a bet?
And I want to make a bet, but I also I know your boy's going to do something silly in one of those games at least, and I like making fun of your boy.
Yes, y'all.
Yeah.
Well, you got benched for game four, so.
He's not a bad kid. I think he's just a habitual line stepper.
What has Yasiel done in the series that requires him being thrown at multiple times now?
How bad is it? Like you know, Mattingly hates having this. Like he loves the talent, but I'm sure he hates having to deal with this every day. Like Mattingly, the old school baseball guy, like you know that did just eats him up inside.
Yeah, he's Yasiel's 23 going on 16, I think. And whenever
he got a little Jameis Winston in him.
No, but I think the stuff Yasiel does is all on the field, and
true.
We haven't seen Jameis on the field sort of have that immature moment yet. It's been all off the field.
That is the good question, though. Would you rather have the immaturity on the field or off the field? Because with Jameis, he has not had that incident, you know, under center, but he's acted a damn fool off the field, whereas with Puig, you know, outside of that one speeding incident, you haven't heard anything off the field. He just has these moments of just knuckleheadedness on the field. Like, which do you think is the better problem to have, I guess?
I guess if you're talking strictly winning baseball, I'd rather have the Jameis Winston on the field in terms of, you know what you're getting. He's going to deliver. And you just deal with the headaches as they come, as opposed to, you know, when Yasiel has a meltdown, it's on the field, and it impacts the team, unfortunately.
Yeah, so note the Yasiel Puig. Next time, steal crabs or steal papayas. That was mildly racist, wasn't it?
Papayas?
Yeah.
I don't think Cubans, are they known for papayas? Cuba?
I've never been to Cuba. What
is a lot of us haven't been to Cuba for various reasons. Castro reasons.
You know what? I was talking, though, with the side tangent. I was, even though all tangents are sidebars, I guess. One of my many female friends north of the border, she's been to Cuba a couple times because I guess they ain't got no beef.
Yeah, they cool.
Yeah, they cool. They cool with Fidel. So she's been a number of times. It's like, it's a beautiful country. I'm like, what Fidel allows you to see is beautiful.
Yeah, I had a chance to go a couple years ago. I go on an annual spring training trip, and the group that does this trip also found a way to get to Cuba through a tour group. So it was a sanctioned trip from the U.S., but I just didn't have the funds to do it. But they had a blast, and they went out and saw baseball games. And, you know, I'm sure it's one of those places where one day I'd like to get down to, maybe in a few years when, you know, things are – not that relations are – bad now at the moment between Cuba and the U.S., but, you know, whenever Castro decides to hang it up for good.
People keep on waiting. Like, how many regimes, or not regimes, but presidencies has he outlasted where people are like, oh, Castro's going to die. Castro's going to die. Fidel ain't going nowhere.
We haven't heard his name in a while. He's 88, but yeah. We haven't heard his name mentioned in a long time.
And if you watch The Simpsons, you know he got that $1 trillion bill from Mr. Burns. So he's straight. He going to be living off that trillion for a minute.
Yeah. Especially in Cuba. That's a long way.
You're like, give it back, Fidel. What are you talking about? So that's going to do it for segment one. It's going to do it for the A block this week. Again, I know baseball may not be a lot of you guys' favorite sport, but watch it in the postseason, man, because there's nothing, you know, to me like postseason baseball, especially when you got good teams playing and you get a lot of extra inning games, a lot of excitement. So, you know, do yourself a favor and check it out.
It's very much like playoff hockey in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't watch hockey during the regular season, but I do like playoff hockey. So, yeah, that's a very good analogy, Marcus.
Hockey season starts this week, by the way.
Hockey season does start this week. So.
Hockey minutes to my bat next week, guys.
Ask a Hockey Negro will be returning next week, when the same week we also learn the true identity of Marcus Vandenberg, the secret origins, if you will. But he was bitten by a radioactive Negro, and he became Marcus Vandenberg. But coming up next, we got Second Down, our weekly football focus, our football fix, and Not to talk about, man. And you know we're going to get into Marcus and his quarterback situation for his New York Jets.
Oh, and your boy, Michael Pitt.
Hey, we'll talk about that in a little bit. More Kings of Sport after the break.
Let the paranoia haunt you. Peace to fashion police. I wear my heart on my sleeve. Let the runway start.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Everybody lack confidence. Everybody lack confidence. How many times my potential was anonymous? How many times the city making me promises? So I promise this.
I love myself. The world is a ghetto. My scars are digitized. I love myself.
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your pigskin preview, your gridiron gab fest, and your weekly football focus. It's time for Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than nodding rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, and if you're hearing that music, it must mean one thing. It is time for Second Down, our weekly football focus. where Marcus and myself take a look at the world of professional and collegiate football. We also have a nice little friendly pick contest going on right now. I don't think we've outlined the terms of what's going to happen when we come up with a winner.
We haven't yet.
So yeah, we'll think of something good. But this week, I think we're going to do our picks. We're going to talk some NFL. But we'll also, before we end this thing, we got to get to into some college football, because there's a big shakeup in the top 25 this past week. But before we do that, Marcus, we mentioned the picks. And again, this is for entertainment purposes only. Let the people know how we did last week and how things are looking for the season.
All right. So last week, Nate, you went 4-1, and I went 3-2. So now, after 5 weeks, you're sitting at 15-10, and I'm sitting at 12-13 overall.
Yeah, it was a strong week for me. Like I think, was it the Redskins the only one that kept me from going being perfect?
Correct. Yeah, and that was what was that final score?
37-34, I think.
No, it wasn't that high.
Was it?
No.
No, I'm looking at the wrong. I'm looking at the wrong
it
score.
It was. Okay, so there was a situation.
Oh, 27-17.
So yeah. There was a late field goal last night that cost you a 5-0 week. Stephen Hollister kicked the field goal late. That I believe the spread we were using was 7.5. Yeah, it was 7.5. So that cost you a 5-0 week. So,
you know the irony of that, though? In one of my fantasy leagues, Hollister was my kicker, and that kick won.
There you go. You can't have it all.
That's life. So we're going to pick 5 more games this week. We always pick 4 Sunday games, and of course we choose the Monday night game, and we are picking to see which of the Kings is the dominant prognosticator. Is it the Godfather, or is it our resident degenerate gambler, Marcus Vandenberg? So let's see, Marcus. Let's start out with what could be a disaster of a game, as Peyton Manning and the Broncos take on
Jets.
Give me the Broncos. Take on your Jets with, I guess, quarterback to be named later.
Denver -9. It could be Denver 29 at this point. Give me the Broncos.
Where's your faith in the Jets, man?
Have you seen our secondary? I'm not so much concerned about the offense as opposed to the defense. I mean,
they're both bad. Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. They're both bad. Like, does Firefighter Ed even go to the games anymore?
Oh, he stopped going after Tebow.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it because of Tebow?
Combination of things, I think. But yeah, he stopped going.
What'd you say the spread was?
9 points.
Yeah, give me Denver.
All right,
we'll talk about more about your situation with your Jets in a little bit. But let's move on to the rest of our games on Sunday. Favorite of the program, Marvin Lewis, and the Bengals hope to rebound against Ace Boogie and the Carolina Panthers. What's the spread on that?
Cincinnati -7.
You know what? I'm going to take Cincy, because as much as I love Cam Newton, I don't think he's quite right yet, Marcus.
No, he's not healthy, but since the road underdogs have done so great this year, I'm going to Carolina.
Okay. Let's go with the Giants and the Eagles, the Sunday night game.
The surprise 3-2 New York Giants. Eagles -2.5.
I'll let you go first on this one.
Give me the Eagles.
You want the Eagles? I'll take the Giants. Give me the G-Man.
Faith in Eli.
Yeah. And let's see, one more Sunday game. Oh, we got to go with Chargers and Raiders.
Chargers, Raiders. Raiders, excuse me, Chargers 7.5.
This is almost like the Jets situation.
At least the Jets have a win over the, over the Raiders.
like, oh, Chargers. You're trying to decide between common sense and your Southern
California. I've seen so many times where the Raiders will get up for this game against San Diego at home, and they'll
it is a rivalry.
You know, give me the Raiders.
The Raiders. All right. So those are the four Sunday games. And finally, we'll go with the Monday night game. And this could be bad as well. The 49ers head to St. Louis to take on the Rams.
San Francisco minus 3.5.
That's it?
Yep.
Oh. I'm still taking the Niners.
Yeah, Niners.
All right, so those are our picks. We picked the Broncos, Jets. We picked the Panthers, Bengals. We picked the Giants and the Eagles, the Chargers and the Raiders, and the 49ers at the Rams. We will see next week who will reign supreme in our Kings of Sport picks contest. But let's get back to something we touched on a little while ago, Marcus. What's going on with your boys, man? What's going on with the Jets?
They are not good. You can say that. The quarterback situation has reached a new low.
Are the New York Jets single-handedly trying to kill off the black quarterback in the NFL?
Or is it the black quarterback? The black quarterback trying to kill off New York Jets and their black fans.
This is like where do you go from here, Marcus? Because I mean, Geno has looked terrible. Mike Vick came in relief and didn't look good at all. Where do you go next week? Like when the game kicks off at 1 o'clock, who do you expect to be behind center for the Jets?
I expect Geno Smith, I guess.
You think they're going to go back to Geno?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they're in a tough spot because they spent all this money on Michael Vick. They gave him $5 million, and he's died awful, too.
Like a little bit. Obviously, Mike Vick.
Oh, come on! He started off 1 of 12 on Sunday.
Obviously, there's no defending that performance. But I would say, isn't there something to be said for the argument of, knowing that you're going to be the starter for the week? Isn't there a different mindset than guy coming in relief?
Hey, we saw with Jimmy Garoppolo against the Kansas City Chiefs in Monday Night Football when he replaced Brady. Came in. Drove him down the field, touchdown. Michael Vick came in, incomplete, sacked, incomplete. It's just like, I understand that the Jets have issues, but...
Is the poor quarterback play, like, granted, nobody's saying that Vick and or Geno are, top 10 quarterbacks, even top 15, even top 20 at this point in Mike Vick's career, but what are they working with? Like, you got somebody going up there and dealing with a lot of talent on the offensive side of the football. Like, the Jets, you got a guy in Eric Decker that's banged up, and even if he's healthy, he's the number two receiver at best. You got, two running backs that are quality in Ivory and Chris Johnson, but if the other team knows that your passing game is not going to be that efficient, we can just stack the box and smother those guys. So, do they really have a lot to work with? And at the end of the day, doesn't that go back, that blame fall on Rex Ryan?
No, it's not on Rex Ryan. It's the GM.
Woody Johnson?
The Giants hit the GM who – the Jets are way under the salary cap, by the way. They have money left over to spend, and they decided to be frugal and not really.
And you get what you pay for.
Yeah, you do. You do. But listen, 1-12 is 1-12. I don't care who the hell you're throwing to. I mean, at some point, they are still professionals out there. And some of those guys would still start on other NFL teams. Jeremy Curley is a adequate receiver. He would start as maybe a third or fourth receiver on other teams in the NFL. But you mentioned the running game. That's been the remarkable thing. They've been able to run the ball. So it's not so much the offensive line isn't great, but it's good enough to at least run the ball and sort of give those guys protection somewhat. Geno wasn't sacked on Sunday. Michael Vick got sacked a couple times. But Geno, for the most part, had some time in the pocket to work with. But when you're just not even close to throwing it to guys, I mean, both of these guys, their biggest downfalls as a quarterback or accuracy. They both struggle with getting the football to the receivers. So if you can't throw an accurate pass, I don't care who's out there, if it's Calvin Johnson or Jeremy Curley, if you can't throw it to them, it's not going to do any good. So that's my biggest gripe with the two quarterbacks, is they can't throw an accurate pass to save their lives.
And the worst part is you have no other option. Like, every quarterback on this roster is suspect in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah, they have no other options. There's no real options on the free agency market. I mean, probably the biggest name out there is Kevin Cobb. And, you know, he's not going to win you any games. And when given Michael Vick $5 million, do you want to really bring in another backup quarterback just to play out the season? And we mentioned Kyle Orton last week. Kyle Orton was someone who was signed late by Buffalo and also to a pretty big salary. I think he's the highest paid backup quarterback in the league. I think Victor second. And Buffalo won a game with Kyle Orton as quarterback. So, I mean, the Jets just don't have that solution at QB that they can turn to. And their schedule doesn't help them either, because now they get to host Denver at home. And then the following week, I believe, is New England. Let me see here. Yeah, so they go to New England on a short week. So they play Sunday. The following Thursday, go to New England. That's another loss. And then they did Buffalo at home before going at Kansas City and then hosting Pittsburgh. And that's all before the bye week. So I could easily see this team losing the next five games.
Well, you know, I think the Jets have no one to blame but themselves. And the GM, rightfully so, because, you know, I think this all goes back to when they cut God's favorite quarterback. I think this is the curse of the Bam Tebow.
How come Denver wasn't cursed then?
That was different. You brought in God's second favorite quarterback. So he was like, yeah, you know, I'm good with this. I can live with this. But, you know, you cut Tebow and you bring in Vic. That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
Speaking of the aforementioned New England Patriots, talk about what a difference a week makes, Marcus. Like a week ago, Tom Brady was benched, and you mentioned who was it, Janine Garoppolo's little brother?
Yeah, Jimmy.
Jimmy Garoppolo came in and played in relief, and there were questions, and people even had the audacity to ask Bill Belichick at the press conference, you know, what's going on with Tom Brady? Are you going to bench Tom Brady in the future? And then they came out this past Sunday against a tough team and put it down.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the last undefeated team in football in Cincinnati. And destroyed them. And, you know, I'm not surprised. It's Marvin Lewis. This is what he does.
You're putting this on Marvin. You're putting a 43-17 loss. You're putting that all on Marvin.
Frauds. I'm telling you, frauds. I'm not buying the Cincinnati is the best team in the NFL talk, because, as we've pointed out in the show many, many times, when it comes to the playoffs, Marvin Lewis, zero playoff wins. 0 for 5, I believe.
You saying Marvin Lewis is the Billy Bean of the NFL coaches?
He is. He'll get you there. But once you get there, that's it.
I don't see him making no movies for Marvin.
Nah, Marvin. Marvin's song. He can get a Drake track.
But man, what are you thinking about the Patriots, man? Did they just respond to the noise around them the week before, or is this a team? I mean, they've got a shot, obviously, in a division that hosts such luminaries as the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins. But, you know, is this a team that can make some noise in the postseason?
I don't see it at the moment. They just look better, a lot better on Sunday, but they just don't look like themselves. And I'm not sure if it's some internal stuff going on with Belichick and Brady or what exactly, but I know Brady was pretty upset when Mankins got traded to Tampa Bay. And
I don't know what it was the week before they got smashed by the Chiefs, which, you know, is understandable because the Chiefs are, you know, one of the better teams in the NFL. But the Bengals, despite what's going on with their postseason history, you know, they weren't exactly the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Patriots came out and looked, you know, really good against them.
Well, yeah, remember, the Bengals are a lot like your boys in Atlanta. They look great at home, but when you get them on the road, they are a different team. And that was evident on Sunday. You know, this is my chance to rip on the Falcons, but I believe the Falcons have lost, I want to say, 10 out of their last 11 road games, I believe. Some stat like that.
I mean, to be fair, they were playing against Eli Manning, a two-time Super Bowl champion, you know.
Yeah. And on top of that, Matt Ryan has one game at the Georgia Dome between now and week 12. So, you know, you're going to pump up your Falcons when they beat up in poor Tampa Bay. But since then, two road games, two losses. Defend your boys.
Hey, man, it's hard to win on the road sometimes. You know, you're staying in different hotels. You know, you're not used to the area. You know, it's just a different stadium. It's a lot of extenuating circumstances, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why all of a sudden this segment turned and we decided to jump on the Falcons, who weren't even the topic of conversation.
Since I listened to the show from 2 weeks ago when you were...
Oh, you finally listened to it.
Yeah, and you...
You say you didn't like Pastor Troy's Rise Up?
Yeah, no.
That is, out of side note, man, like, I love bad NFL season raps. Like, when you get, like, you remember when Jim Jones did the Ballin' remix for the Giants?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you got these rappers that have to work in players into the rhymes? It's just like, it's like, I just love, like, how it's like, well, the Saints are going to win. They're going to do it with ease. Quarterback in the team, my man Drew Brees. Like, no. Don't do it. Don't do it.
As we all know what the best football team theme song is, right? We're both in agreement on this.
Super Bowl Shuffle?
No. I'm not talking about, like, a team-associated song. Not a team song in terms of the players, but, like, a team fight song.
Oh, I got to be San Diego Super Shuffle.
Exactly, man.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah, and that's something that lasts forever because they didn't put the players of the day into the song.
Nope.
You know, like, you can't be listening to I forget who it was when I used to live in San Diego. I think it might have been like Kid Frost or somebody of that ilk that produced a record for the San Diego Chargers one year. Mm-hmm. I think it was the year they went to the Super Bowl and got smashed by the 49ers.
Okay.
And it was like... I know Seau had a line in the song.
Natron Means,
yeah.
Stan Humphries.
It's like, the Chargers are better than all of your teams running the attack with Natron Means. Like, no, stop. Come on, man. Like, you can't. I just love the stretches that they got to go to incorporate these players into the rhyme.
Yeah, before I latched on to the Jets, I was a Chargers fan, mostly because of...
That's a bad choice right there.
Yeah, well, mostly because listening to the sports talk radio station, listening to Extra Sports, it's 90, was the home of the San Diego Chargers. And at that point, the Raiders are gone, the Rams are gone.
It used to be the mighty 690 with Jim Rome and Hacksaw.
Yeah. So I listened to my fair share of Chargers games, and then the Jets came around and stole my heart for some reason. So
Like, I wish somebody would have done, like, before Dennis Allen got fired, like, somebody, maybe Snoop, would have had, like, an Oakland Raiders rap. Like, no. Yeah, yeah, man, the Raiders are coming to get you with our all-star punter, Shane Leckler, for Shizzle. Because that's, like, you got a line about Leckler and you got a line about Janikowski, and that's it for the Raiders. So... That's the NFL, man. Like, it sometimes the NFL is predictable. Other weeks, man, it's like a lot of these results that we saw in week five, it's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know how good some of these teams actually are at the end of the day.
Yeah, we're more than a quarter of the season is done. I think by...
Like, are the Buffalo Bills really a better team than the Detroit Lions? I don't think so, but they won on Sunday.
Why? Well, as I told you, Kyle Orton's going to lead them to the playoffs.
You still going to ride that Orton train?
I 1-0 under Kyle Orton. I was shooting pretty hard for Buffalo at the end of that game, just to be right. And he didn't look terrible. He looked all right.
No. I think Kyle Orton is a serviceable quarterback. I just think that if he's your option as a starter in 2014, that says more about E.J. Manuel, in my opinion, than it does, you know, how good Kyle Orton is.
I would kill to have Kyle Orton at this point in New York. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it is now.
You kill to have E.J. Manuel. Let's be real.
No, I don't need it.
E.J. over Geno?
Listen.
You'd rather have Geno than EJ at this point?
Give me a white quarterback.
Like, I just need somebody stable who reads defenses and is accurate.
Who can throw the ball further than 10 yards and get it there.
No, what's the code? He plays well in the pocket.
Yeah. I'm at that point now where I'm just like, oh, please, just take me back to the days of Vinny Testaverde.
I was gonna say, like, you have the black quarterback and the Mexican quarterback. You're like, I just need a regular white quarterback.
I mean, I would rather have Mark Sanchez at this point, who's healthy. I mean, he hasn't played in Philly yet because Foles has been fine. But from what I saw in the preseason, you know, Sanchez looked fine. I'm sure he would be just as bad, if not better, than Geno Smith at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's preseason, too, because to be fair, Vic looked decent in the preseason.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw what happened on Sunday. Like, what world do we live in where Michael Vick is a better positive role model than a football player?
Yeah, that's...
That's crazy.
I don't know what that says about society or how bad he is at football now.
Like, Michael Vick is a better... example to kids in terms of how to turn your life around than he is actually in between the hashtags.
Yeah.
The hash marks, not the hashtags. But yeah, that's the NFL. Real quick, Marcus, let's hit up on some college football, because there were some big games over the weekend and a lot of shakeups in your Pac-12, man.
Yeah, it was probably one of the craziest Saturdays in college football I can remember in a long time.
Yeah, did you see that coming, man? Like, I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight, oh, you know, this could happen, that could happen, but Arizona? Like Rich Rodriguez?
No, I'm not going to say I saw that coming, but Arizona did beat Oregon last year in Arizona, so was it a total surprise? I guess it shouldn't be, considering this is what Oregon does. They find a way to lose a game every year, and considering Arizona, granted, they're starting a freshman quarterback this year. So,
and all the games that, you know, you would have circled as this could be a dangerous game for Oregon, this could be a game, you know, in conference where they could lose, I don't think anybody had Arizona as that game.
No. But now you're in a situation where you have, this week coming up, you have Oregon versus UCLA, both teams needing a win, both teams coming off bad losses at home, and Oregon will be traveling down here to UCLA to play the Bruins. But in terms of the Pac-12 race, that's going to be key, because one of those teams will have two conference losses, and You know, if UCLA loses, they'll be two games behind Arizona in the Pac-12 South. So, and we can mention USC since we're going to be, you know, fair and balanced to who lost on a fucking Hail Mary. yeah, that wasn't fun.
Yeah, real quick, let's go through the AP Top 25. Number one, of course, Florida State. Number two is Auburn. Number three, Mississippi State. Tied with Ole Miss at number three. Number five is Baylor. Number six, Notre Dame. We'll touch on them in a second. Number seven, Bama. And nothing in the world makes me happier than to see a straight number behind that dash mark in the record for Alabama. Because, I mean, Nick Saban's great and all, but I hate Alabama.
I told you this was going to be the year they weren't going to be Alabama-like.
Yeah.
And that schedule... Well, everyone in the SEC has a tough schedule, but actually their schedule isn't that bad considering the rest of the team. Well, yeah, Texas A&M coming up, and they also have Mississippi State, who no one saw the Mississippi schools sort of becoming a thing and really taking over the SEC.
Yeah, so then you've got Michigan State at number 8, TCU number 9, Arizona, like we talked about a second ago, at number 11, or number 10, excuse me. Oklahoma at 11, Oregon at 12, Georgia at 13, Texas A&M at 14, Ohio State 15, Oklahoma State comes in at number 16, Kansas State at 17, UCLA at number 18, East Carolina at 19, Arizona State at 20, Nebraska at 21, Georgia Tech 22, Missouri 23, Utah 24, and Stanford at 25. And going back to the top 10, Marcus, I know when I brought it up when we did our college football preview, you kind of scoffed, man. You had a little scoffing tone in your voice when I mentioned, you know, Notre Dame could find a way to backdoor into this thing.
I'll scoff some more.
You're still scoffing?
Yes, I'm still scoffing.
Still a non-believer.
I told you. I've been.
You believe in Kyle Orton, but you don't believe in the power of Notre Dame and the allure that they have over the voters that they could somehow sneak in if they handle business on the field.
Listen, much like your Falcons, we haven't seen a road game, a true road game from the Irish. They've played nothing but neutral and home games so far. It's great that they're 5-0, and they finally played a ranked team this past week in Stanford and barely got by at home. So. But let's see what they do when they go to Florida State, they go to Arizona State, they end the year at USC. So when they have to actually play outside of, you know, South Bend, then let's see. But until then,
I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated, but let's say the only loss on their record at the end of the year is Florida State. And you know how people love Notre Dame in the media, Marcus. It's not that crazy. They can sneak in. That's all I'm saying.
If their only loss is at Florida State.
And so they beat SC at the end of the season. Their only loss is Florida State.
What I think is going to hurt them, if that's the case, is the fact that they don't have a conference final game to play in. So their last team would be USC. And I think if you're looking at a situation where you have a Notre Dame team that, say, is sitting there at 4, and you have, say, like Alabama at 5, and Alabama is somehow in the SEC championship game, and they beat Auburn for a second time, I think that will be what will cost them ultimately at getting, you know, sort of backdoored in. But, you know, I could see them being in definitely in the running if that's their only loss is Florida State, which it's understandable.
Yeah, see, not so scoff-worthy now, is it?
No, I'm still not buying it. I still think that, A, they're not that good. And
I don't even know why I'm arguing for Notre Dame, because I hate Notre Dame, but I have a feeling that if
black quarterback, see, that's what did you
the black quarterback.
You want to believe
like black quarterbacks, they get me every time.
They do.
You think I would have learned from Marcus Vick?
Oh God.
Has there ever been a less impressive brother in the history of sports?
Logan Thomas. Oh, I did. You meant Virginia Tech only.
I was gonna go Isaac and Psycho, but I think we've done that. We beat up on Ozzy enough.
Yeah.
Like, Like if
oh, that kind of brother. Oh.
Oh, you.
I was thinking black.
You're going racial brother. I was going brother.
Oh, like, no.
Like, as much crap as Eli gets, like, Marcus Vick is so far removed from Michael Vick, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
Like, Ozzie Canseco may have been a better major leaguer than... Well, he was, because he actually played in the pros.
Yeah, that's true.
Marcus Vick never... He played in some preseason games, and that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Ozzie Canseco, a better brother than Marcus Vick.
Yeah.
I got some Marcus Vick stories I could tell, but I won't. Cause you talk about Puig and Jameis being knuckleheads.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Vick was the worst combination of all because he was a knucklehead on the field and off the field.
Yeah, and he's still a knucklehead to this day.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can say what you want to say about Mike, but at least, you know, he did his time and he changed. Marcus ain't changing.
Nah, not at all. Quick side note, since we talked baseball in segment one, the ratings came out for Monday night, and I guess not as a surprise, but the WWE outdrew the Major League Baseball playoffs.
Well, I mean, you know, when you got the heavy hitters like Kathy Lee and Hoda.
WWE did 3.9 million at their peak. The playoff games did 2.9 and 1.8 million people.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you know, watch baseball players, you know, play ball and spit and pat each other on the ass, or watch Kathleen Hoda drink and dance and smash champagne or wine bottles on each other's ass. What are you going to pick, Marcus? You know, the people have spoken.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Baseball, everybody.
That's a bad night, though. Like, that's a bad night for baseball, though. You're going up against wrestling and football.
Yeah, but... I mean, even the Knights have been uncontested. They haven't been great numbers.
Well, baseball, everybody. Enjoy it. They still make money, though, Marcus. Don't be so dour.
They're not making NBA money.
Oh, yeah. NBA, real quick. NBA making some big change. We knew this was going to go down, though, when the new deal was signed.
Yeah. And LeBron knew too. That's why he signed that 1 year deal or a 2 year deal with the 1 year out.
Yep, LeBron is about to get paid. And what is it? They've got it. So ESPN and is it
Turner?
ESPN and Turner have the exclusive rights to the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So Fox is on the outside looking in.
Wait, no, that exclusive. I mean, teams will still have, I think, their regional.
The regional coverage, right. But yeah, in terms of a national state, you can only get it from ESPN or, you know, the Turner Network.
Yeah, that part hasn't changed. Because that's how it was prior to this. Yeah,
because so. Yeah, I think there was some, you know, kind of a scuttlebutt, which is a funny word, scuttlebutt. Some scuttlebutt about Fox trying to become a player in this. But at the end of the day, it's about that money, man. And I'm just glad Turner didn't lose the coverage. Because to me, they do the best coverage.
Yeah, I mean, the best show on television comes back end of this month inside the NBA.
Yeah, because Saturdays on NBC was my jam. Because you had cartoons all morning. Then you had Inside the NBA with Ahmad Rashad.
Wait, how dare you skip over Saved by the Bell and Hang Time?
Yeah, I mean, that was when I...
watch yourself.
That was when I went outside and, you know, got some exercise, you know, after the cartoons went off, you know. Then I'd come back, have lunch, Ahmad Rashad with the inside stuff, and Summer Sanders, who was on there for some reason. I don't know why. But then you get the NBA on NBC, and with that came John Tesh's theme music. That was a good Saturday.
Still the best TV sports theme song
ever? It's up, if not the best, it's up there. Like, I think the Fox football music has become iconic.
Yeah, it has.
I think it might have been CBS football, like, back in the 80s. It was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I always used to like that.
Yeah, actually, I guess the number one theme song, iconic-wise, would be Monday Night Football.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, the John Tesh Round Ball Rock is up there.
Yeah.
Like, I bought... The old video game it was an NBA Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they used the NBA on NBC crew and they had the John Tesh theme song in the game. Game was terrible. The game was worthless. So basically, I spent like $25-$30 on PlayStation just to hear a song that I could download off the internet.
I was hoping one of these networks would somehow buy the rights to that theme song and incorporate it with their network coverage. Sort of not so much as an ode to NBC, but sort of pay homage to that theme song and sort of the 90s NBA scene.
Like, Turner should do it, because really, Turner doesn't even have an identifiable theme, because a lot of times on their breaks in and out, they just use whatever music is popular right now.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'd rather hear John Tesh than Will I Am.
Though I could name you I could point out the TNT theme song at the moment, but it's certainly replaceable.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about really for like the studio show, but I'm talking about, you know, like during the game when they go to break, it'll be Will I Am or Drake or whatever artist they're playing. Like, I'd rather hear, you know, just a consistent musical theme produced by John Tesh. It's got to be his best selling record.
Oh, is it? Have you seen him do it in person? The YouTube video of him performing it?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
He gets into it?
He gets into it, yeah. The crowd really gets into it.
It's the one John Tesh song that black people mark for.
Oh, yeah. And don't even know it's John Tesh.
Right.
That's the funny part.
But yeah, that's going to do it. That's going to do it for Second Down, Marcus. Like, I don't know how we got to baseball and John Tesh in the NBA, but, you know, it's all good. I'm not angry. But it happens, man. That's life. You know, nothing to get angry about. But coming up next, we're going to talk to a man that a lot of you out there think is angry. A lot of you out there may think he's a jerk. We're going to get to the bottom of this stuff. We're going to talk to this man and find out about his life, his career. We're going to find out about his thoughts on Katy Perry, his thoughts on Rob Ford, and a myriad of other stuff, including Jason Agnew, why you so mad? So, stick and stay, because coming up next, we're going to talk to Jason Agnew from Live Audio Wrestling and TSN 1050 in Toronto, Canada. So, stay tuned. We got more Kings of Sport right after the break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Now let's get back to the world's most dangerous sports show. It's the Kings of Sport. TheKingsOfSport.com.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest in sports and pop culture news, information, and opinions. And if you want opinions, we've got a guest for you today, folks. He is a friend of the program. He is known internationally as a commentator on the sport of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. He also has more television credits than anyone I know. He's like the Canadian Ryan Seacrest. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Jason Agnew. Jason Agnew, what is going on, my brother?
It's a very nice intro you gave me there, Nate. I thought you were going to say he's known all over the world for being a jerk.
We're going to get to that.
Oh, okay. Considering the crossover audience you might have for my live audio wrestling, persona that I throw out there, and I say persona when I mean me.
Yeah, fortunately, you're not making the call today, so you can't hang up on us.
I will find a way to hang up on you. No. Happy to be here. Thank you very much for having me on. I've heard this show has been graced by my colleagues, Wei and John, already. So, you know, I'm a little bit, you know, down the roster here, which I understand. Those two guys are extremely likable. So, and now you've gone the polar opposite direction for this particular episode.
We had to bring in the big guns this week. It's a big time in sports, but, you know, Marcus and I used to talk about wrestling each and every week. And I don't know about you, Jay, but I'd say over the past year, the product has, between TNA and 3-Hour Raws, it's just become somewhat of a chore to watch sometimes.
It sucks. This is tough to the chase.
Hey, man. I completely agree. It's definitely a chore, and sucks would be a word that I would use. Thank God for PVRs, because really I don't watch the product live. I can tell you last night, Monday Night Raw was on, and I get messages here and there of, what do you think of Raw? And I'm like, well, guys, I ran a live show last night up here. I ran a live comedy show on Monday nights and didn't even think twice about missing Raw. Granted, I mean, I got up this morning and I watched it on PVR, but that allowed me to fast forward through everything except Ambrose and the pleasant surprise of The Rock, which somehow, some way, I had managed to avoid knowing that that had happened.
Wow.
And got a real, it was so refreshing. Let me tell you something, guys. On the couch this morning, and I wasn't on social media. I purposely did this so I didn't, you know any results. And when I say results, I don't mean match results. I just mean, like, you know, what happened in storylines and stuff. I hate watching Raw when I already know what happens as far as storylines go. Results, I don't care about. But last night, I avoided all of that. So I get up this morning and, you know, have my coffee and sit down on the couch and watch this. And when The Rock came out, it was one of those magical wrestling moments. And I don't know why. Maybe because the product has been just so completely boring and terrible. Maybe because, yeah, I'm an insider and I follow it all the time. And I normally know when there are going to be surprises. But this, to me, was a legitimate surprise. And I sat there and I felt as though it was like when Jericho came out for his debut in WWE, you know? I mean, not that surprising and not that spectacular, but just the fact that there was a surprise. And that is just one of the big things that wrestling is missing nowadays, is surprises and things that actually get you excited about watching the product.
Yeah, well, you get all these kind of manufactured surprises and manufactured swerves that don't really connect with the audience. And I was surprised myself last night because I had come home from work and the first hour or so was a drag to watch, and after Kathy Lee and Hoda, I tapped out. Went to sleep, but then when I woke up, like, I just had like three messages and a couple texts from my wrestling friends in the area, and they're like, did you see what happened last night? So I'm like, let me check this out before I go to work. And you're right, it is very rare that you get a genuine surprise, and you saw how well it came across because it was something real. It wasn't something, you know, it wasn't an emotion that we were told to feel. It was genuine emotion when The Rock returned.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I would guess, I actually don't know if this did this leak before the show last night? It did not. So, I mean, could you imagine being in that audience and sitting there being incredibly – granted, you know, the Ambrose and that stuff. But you see that every week, and sitting there and The Rock's music hits and he comes out for a program with Rusev, who still is a pretty hot character, having said that, right? Just such a delightful surprise. He was great with the promo, as he always is. The stuff with Lana was excellent. They didn't make Rusev look like a total geek either. He just took the clothesline. He didn't take the Rock Bottom or anything like that. And I don't know if this is dropping a breadcrumb for something down the line at WrestleMania, which I really hope it's not. Actually, I don't think the Rock and Rusev is the right program for Mania. I think Rock and Brock would be great at Mania, but not Rock and Rusev. It was just an enjoyable segment to watch. And it was, you know, because when Jericho came out, the first time he came out versus The Rock, and it was that back and forth that they had, that promo war, and it was just really a delight to sit there for those, I don't know, what, 5-10 minutes and watch that segment. That pretty much did it for me. That's all I can give you praise for last night's Raw.
I haven't seen the ratings yet, but from a timing aspect, they nailed it because it was leading into halftime of the Monday Night Football game, and I saw all these tweets from people talking about, well, it's halftime and The Rock is on, so I'm going to flip over. And I stopped watching because I was at work. And You know, I've had many of those moments at work where I have wrestling on and I get mocked by my coworkers because a segment like a Hoda Lee, Kathy Lee and Hoda Kotb comes on. So after that segment happened, I turned it off because it was also playoffs and football. So I didn't know about The Rock until I saw on Twitter, and I flipped over and I was, you know, pleasantly surprised to see it. And I'm glad stuff like that, you know, that's a good call for, especially for an audience like Brooklyn where most of that night they were just shitting on the product. And that,
well, did you notice in that segment, the real terrible segment with Kathy Lee and her friend there, they kept Adam Rose's music up.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that was not because they wanted to have that as a backbeat. That's because they wanted to drown out the crowd from just tearing that segment apart, because it is one of the most rambunctious crowds you're going to get, and they are going to crap on that segment. So by leaving that music up, it did drown out a lot of the cheers.
What did you think about the Joan London segment? Because while I appreciate her telling her story, part of me feels like this is almost like exploitation of breast cancer, and just, I don't know, it felt a little out of place.
Yeah, out of place is a good word for it. You know, it was real genuine, and you're doing this on a show where nothing else is genuine.
Yeah.
So it's a very strange dynamic to put this piece on here and then go right back to Dean Ambrose with a hot dog cart a couple segments later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These things always feel kind of weird to me, though, because what was it, last week when they were in Chicago and you had the Titus O'Neil telling the story about losing his grandmother?
And yeah, then, he's told that story before. I remember that.
Right after that, they do the silliness with Jesse Jackson, and then he's fighting a midget bull with a midget gator. It's like, it's, you know, there's a disconnect between what should be serious and what should be a heartwarming story and your typical Monday night foolishness.
You know, at least, Nate, though, with that one, that was a vignette that was in between. It wasn't a live piece, right?
Yeah.
So with the one last night, it was a live piece when she was out there to the crowd. So it's a very different feel when you do something like that. The one that really got me last year was when Layla was telling the story about her mom. And I'm just like, oh, man, this is so sad. But once again, done in a vignette form. So I don't mind those as much. Last night, it was a very weird juxtaposition.
Yeah, speaking of weird juxtapositions, Marcus.
Great segue. I don't know where you're going.
Where are we going with this? Go ahead.
Well, you know where we're going with this. You know where we're going with this, Marcus, because week after week, you go to Vegas and you hang out with your degenerate gambler friends, and usually you're doing something like watching UFC or watching Summer League NBA, but this last trip to Vegas, and we talked about it on last week's program, you went to see Katy Perry with your fiance, and I guess I'm outnumbered on this particular show today because you and Brother Agnew have something in common when it comes to appreciating the talents of one Katy Perry.
Hell yeah, we do.
I like her, but to be honest with you, Nate and Marcus, I was disappointed in the concert.
Whoa.
I had just come off seeing a couple of weeks before I went to see Michael Bublé with my mom, and you know, I go to a lot of concerts, the Frankie Valleys of the world, Barry Manilow's, just to take my mom. Plus, sometimes I get comp tickets, which is great. Well, Bublé actually paid for it because it's one of her favorites. And I went to see Bublé. And the thing is, I'm not a huge fan of the music. Like, it's okay. I do like the Sinatra style stuff.
I was going to say, is like that your wheelhouse? Like the crooners?
I do like the crooners. But I'm not a huge fan of Bublé's music. I like it. Don't get me wrong. I probably wouldn't change the channel if it was on. But his concert is just phenomenal. He is the most charming and entertaining personality, and it goes back to, you know, that class and that entertainment value of the Rat Pack that he puts forward. He interacts with the audience, and it's just, you're in a crowd of 20,000 people in the Air Canada Center or whatever arena, and he makes it feel like, you know, an intimate venue when he comes out and interacts with the crowd. And he seems genuine. Katy Perry. and he's also funny, right? He's extremely charming and extremely funny. Katy Perry, on the other hand, is not funny, even though she tries to be. She has admitted to this, that she feels as though she would have been better off in her career if she had gone past high school, because she only has a high school education, and it really does limit her as far as, you know, interacting with the crowd. I just don't think she's charismatic. I think she's all sizzle,
mm-hmm.
and not that much, you know, staked behind that sizzle. You know, I've seen her a couple times. The first time I saw her back in concert was when she was doing the, I think it was the Hot and Cold tour. And Pollock and Justin actually went with me as well. And her vocals were horrendous. Just horrendous. Now, her vocals have gotten better on this tour, and it's a sensational show, don't get me wrong, and something that, you know, if you're a 13 to 15 year old girl, I'm sure you'd love. But me walking in there is, you know, I was more so like one of the dads just going, well, I'm here, I like the music, but I don't really, she's not engaging, I think is what I'm trying to say. Really not engaging.
It felt like she was trying to find a way to relate to the audience, and it was, the audience was sort of, it was more younger kids than I thought. So some of the stuff she was saying, it was almost cringeworthy because I was like, oh, I don't know about this whole profanity bit and stuff. But it felt like she was trying to find a relate to not only the kids, but to also her older fans in the audience. And as for the actual concert itself, it was a perfect show for someone who has ADD because it was so high-paced and everything was so different that even if you didn't know the songs on the album, it felt like it moved so fast. It didn't seem like a 2-hour show, which was good because I'm not a big Katy Perry fan. I was going to support my friend who's a backup singer for hers. So for that sense, she did enough to keep my attention.
Hey, let me ask you something. You said you saw her in Vegas, right? Uh-huh. Did she play Waking Up in Vegas?
She did.
She did because she didn't play it here in Toronto. I bet she just added that
just
because
that.
She was in Vegas. Yeah, it wasn't on her set list this time, which I was kind of disappointed with because it's one of my favorites.
The interesting thing for me about Katy Perry, though, is, like you said, Jay, I kind of agree in that it's a very kind of superficial act in terms of her music. But she's got a knack. I don't know if it's her or her handlers or the record company, but whether it's doing a duet with Kanye or doing a duet with Missy Elliott or with Juicy J on the Dark Horse song.
Right.
They find a way to make her relevant not in pop culture right now.
Oh yeah, and her songs are super catchy. Don't get me wrong. Like I really dig her songs. You know, they're not a wonderful songwriter or anything like that, but I dig it. I if it's on the radio, not only am I not turning it off, I'm turning it up.
I'm not sure if you caught this up in Canada, but I think Nate might have saw it. But over the weekend, there's a show on ESPN called College Game Day, and every week they have a celebrity guest pitcher to pitch college football games. And this past Saturday they had Katy Perry, who the ESPN crew was an Ole Miss, and I guess her road manager went to Ole Miss, so they had Katy Perry come on and do guest pitch. And this was quite the buzz Saturday morning on the internet because you see all these white guys, older white guys, who are just frazzled and didn't know how to handle someone of Katy Perry's stature and also beauty and fame on the set. And also, she also gave a shout-out to the Oklahoma quarterback and basically said to call her. She's found a way to sort of be relatable. And, you know, when you tell someone you went to a Katy Perry show, I didn't get the response that I was expecting from, say, if I said maybe a Britney Spears or someone along those lines. So I think she's found a way to sort of edge out some credibility.
Oh yeah, I mean she's got her niche
and she's hot
for sure. And you know what? I'm she's attractive. She wouldn't be, you know, right on the top of my list, to be honest with you.
I tell you what, after Marcus sent me that, I'm with you, Jay. But after Marcus sent me this clip the other day, like her attractiveness jumped up a couple notches.
Oh, the one of her party. Oh, so after the game, there's a clip of her at a local bar in Mississippi, and she was just hammering it back and just crowd surfing, just totally just being relatable and just
that's cool.
Just like the average girl next door.
Cool.
Like fun loving white girl that likes alcohol and probably makes bad choices in relationships.
Type of girl.
That's my type right there.
She's not Canadian though.
At least she's not, you know, one of them that consistently sings about it like the Taylor Swifts of the world, you know?
Yes.
Taylor Swift is just, granted, I love her new single too. I'm a sucker for stuff like that, but that's the worst video, and she is the most awkward looking girl. That, it's like she's, I don't know how old, like 26 or something, and she's still living in a 15-year-old awkward girl's body. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, her dances, though, whenever they catch her at these award shows dancing in the crowd, that's like pure comedy.
She's just so awkward.
Well, speaking of comedy,
Keep segueing, Nate. Keep going.
I know that you are involved in the comedy scene up there in Toronto. Yep. And comedy is something that I am. I've been a fan of comedy for as long as I can remember. And it's on my bucket list one of these days to get up on stage and, you know, at least for a couple minutes and do some comedy. But how did you get involved with that? And you know, were you always a fan of stand-up?
You know what? It's not really stand-up, actually. I mean, I've produced stand-up shows. I'm working for Byte Television up here and such, but I'm more so in the world of improv. It's something that I've taken up in the past couple of years. I mean, my history was that I grew up with sketch comedy is where my real love was in the world of comedy. And Saturday Night Live was, of course, a huge inspiration. The Mike Myers and Dana Carvey years of Saturday Night Live and Wayne's World and such. And that kind of rolled me into wanting to do TV and video stuff and led me to Ryerson to take radio and television arts. And then from there, I strayed off to do radio and TV. And I ended up being an executive producer up here of a comedy channel called Byte Television. And after I was like, go from that, that's actually when I started getting into doing live stuff. And I took up improv to basically, you know, it's something that I wanted to learn how to do. I was already hosting some improv shows. So I did improv and I have come up with my own improv format and I'm just kind of putting that in place now and running this show called Two Strikes. Is it anyway, but the audience gets to be mean to the performers because, you know, that's my persona. I take something that's lovely and good and I try to find a mean spin to it somehow, some way.
So would you say you're more of the Wayne Brady type or what's your style of improv?
Oh man, I have a thing. You know how you say that in wrestling, we'll relate it back to something for you here. Wrestling, the best characters are just extensions of oneself, right? So that's how I feel about hosting as well. So when I'm a host, it's some aspect of me somehow, some way that is this host. And doing improv, I actually struggle. I really do struggle as an improviser, and I'm still very, very junior in it. When it comes to hosting a show here in Toronto, I'll host your primetime Friday night shows. When it comes to actually doing improv, put me on a Tuesday and put me on the lower tier show, you know? Like, I'm not that strong with it. So, because I struggle with doing characters, I don't lose myself in a character. And I had actually heard this criticism of someone like Sarah Silverman, who just hosted Saturday Night Live this past week. And they said that Bob Odenkirk said that as a writer on the show in the late 90s, she was criticized in the fact that she wasn't a fit because she never lost herself in a character. It was always, you know, Sarah Silverman playing this character. And that's very much what you get with me, unfortunately, or fortunately, to a degree, depending on what I'm doing. And it's really tough for me to, you know, break and just dive into another person.
It feels like everyone, and what's the connection between Toronto and the improv scenes? I feel like that is sort of like one of the staples when you talked about the city of Toronto.
It is. Second City is really what it is. I mean, Second City's base is in Chicago, but Toronto has a branch of Second City, which would be, I think LA has one as well, but Toronto's definitely number two. And you've had people go through there, and SCTV came out of Toronto as well. So, you know, you have that history and the pedigree of Andrea Martin, even though she wasn't Canadian, but, you know, your John Candy, Eugene Levy, Martin Short was just down the road in Hamilton. And then you get into your Mike Myers and Colin Mochrie is from here as well, still lives in Toronto. So there is quite the history of improv in this city. And Second City, if you're coming to Toronto, like, go check out a Second City show. It's great. Some of the humor is local in regards to our politics, but lately our politics has been very national here as well.
Very much.
And then, you know, go to Comedy Bar. Like, Comedy Bar is just a great independent comedy place that caters to sketch, stand-up, and improv as well. And there's a bunch of great shows that run here each and every week. I like that one that's called Two Strikes. It's pretty good.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, okay.
But the cool thing about comedy in Canada, you know, and I was up there for my brief cup of coffee –
is that what you call her now? She's white.
She's a cup of milk, right?
A cup of cream?
Yeah,
a cup of Irish cream.
There you go.
But the Canadian style, just in terms of the sensibility, it struck me as somewhat British in terms of that dry wit, but it was also... There was also a lot of, I don't know how to say it, but it's kind of absurdity, abstractness, maybe that's the word I'm going for, an abstract vein of comedy mixed with that dry kind of British sensibility. Was that something that is evident, or is that something I was just picking up, I was reading into?
I don't know. Maybe it's friendly. You know, Canadians have the reputation of, you know, apologizing for everything and being a very friendly country. And maybe that's part of it. I mean, improv in itself is a very positive environment. You know, I don't just encourage people who want to be a performer to go do improv. It's something that can help you in your daily life to just go take, you know, an introductory class. It's something to get you out of your shell. And one of the first things you learn when you go into a room doing a basic improv class is, well, you know what? Let's just drop all your high status at the door, and you're going to look like a fool here. But you know what? You're going to be surrounded by this other class of 8 to 10 people, and everyone's going to look like a fool in front of one another, and you're going to be comfortable in that space. Very much a safe space to perform. Just have fun, and it can really help. I've seen people who are very shy and take an improv class or two, and you know, it does help you not only if you want to do performance, but in your work environment as well. Like say doing presentations, you learn to roll with the punches, and I think it's just something that's very helpful for pretty much anyone.
You might have talked me into improv, hadn't you? You
might have talked me into it. It's just a good time. Plus, where are you? Marcus? You're in LA, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so you're in LA. I mean, when I was in LA for when we almost crossed paths there, I got to go to UCB, which on a Wednesday night, I saw a show there called Cage Match, which is 2 20-minute improv sets, two teams compete. And it was 11 o'clock on a Wednesday night, and there was a lineup out the door and around the block to get into this. And they don't even serve booze at UCB.
Hmm.
I was just shocked. It's such a great culture, and it's so strong. Whereas in Toronto, like I ran my show last night, and I at least have the advantage of having a couple of radio shows where I can give away tickets and have people come out. And I did so last night, but it's really tough to get people into shows here in Toronto, even though the talent pool is definitely here. Like, it's very high in regards to the talent pool. But, you know, in L.A., it's just part of the culture and the cool thing to do. And that's really something that we'd like to bring to Toronto.
You mentioned radio. Your background is sort of diverse in terms of you do radio, you do TV. Which one do you prefer? Acting, radio, TV?
Well, definitely not acting. Definitely not acting. I mean, I do that here and there in regards to, you know, you throw me on a commercial, and I've done a few of those that right now are popping up all over Canada. Some in the U.S., actually. There's that Tyson Chicken commercial that I'm there as a dad at a table when the wife serves ridiculous food. So I always find it funny.
You're
when
you're on a Tyson Chicken commercial?
Yeah, I'm on a Tyson Chicken commercial.
Wow.
And I mean, Edward, what are you, jealous, Nate, because it's chicken?
I was going to say, no disrespect. I love you, Jason. But yeah. Not only are we importing our actors for our chicken commercials, but we're getting white guys.
He didn't say fried right? chicken. It could be baked chicken.
Can the stereotypes play in my favor?
But yeah, I'm on this weird Tyson Chicken commercial where the mom on the commercial is serving extravagant meals. There's like a DJ in the background of one. There's a flamethrower and stuff. And I'm just sitting there at a table with my two kids. But so definitely not acting. You know, I really love doing TV. The show that I did called The Conventioneers was my favorite show that I've ever done in my life. It was just myself and Matt Chin going to conventions and making fun of people all across North America. And I got to go to some of the weirdest places doing that. Stuff I'm doing now is cool. I'm doing kids TV now. I did Splat-A-Lot, which aired on Nickelodeon in the U.S., and that lent me over to do a show up here called Tiny Talent Time, which is essentially a kids talent show. That is, once again, like improv, a safe space. There's no judging or anything to the kids. They just come out and do their talents, and it's really popular in Ontario, basically, because it's a reboot of an old franchise that ran for 35 years. I enjoy all of that, don't get me wrong, but radio is really cool. Radio, the intimate medium, and to be able to just kind of go in, and you can do radio yourself if you so choose. I like the interaction with the callers and the immediacy and the fact that there isn't a huge production. But, you know, I've always done both. That's one of the things. Even though there, at one time I was running Byte Television as the exec producer, hosting the Conventioneers, hosting Splat-A-Lot, doing Sunday morning trivia and doing live audio wrestling. Like, I was doing all of those simultaneously or throughout my career, whatever I was doing. I've been doing the law for 15 years. Rarely do I miss a show unless it's for one of my other jobs. And I took on Sunday morning trivia and, you know, really enjoyed doing it as well on a weekly basis. I look forward to Sunday mornings when I get to go on the air and just kind of hang out. I mean, I'm the type of guy who, when I go out, I'd rather be on stage than sitting and watching someone on stage. I'd rather be working than doing nothing. I jump at the opportunity because it doesn't feel like work.
And I know you love Tiny Talent Time.
Yep.
But you can't tell me deep down in the pit of your soul that you enjoy that more than yelling at marks and hanging up on them every week on the law.
I balance my world, Nate. I really balance my world. I tell you, one of the coolest things about Tiny Talent Time, and this might seem super selfish, and it really took me aback, is that when I took the gig, I already been on YTV hosting Splat-A-Lot, which is Wipeout for Kids, essentially. And what I didn't really realize is the impact that that show had on YTV. I mean, I knew it was a very high-rated show. We did two seasons, so it's 52 episodes, and it was played just ad nauseum up here. So all the kids love it. So walking into a room of kids that are all between the ages of 4 and 12, you know, anyone who's over 7 years old knows that show. And they don't know the difference between some guy who's living in LA and doing television shows or some guy who's living in Etobicoke and doing television shows. So to them, I was a huge celebrity. I would walk into rooms and they would start screaming. And then all of a sudden their parents would run in with the phones and just take picture after picture after picture. And it was the coolest environment. Plus, you know, if you think back to guys, I mean, I know you're both sports guys, we're on a sports podcast. Think back to when you were meeting one of your sports idols when you were a kid. And, you know, that's kind of the moment that I was having with these kids, but I was on the other side of it. Because I remember meeting a Toronto Maple Leaf named Rob Pearson when I was 12. He wasn't even a good player, but it was the coolest thing for me because he was like a gritty winger. And that's what I used to be when I played hockey. And I have this picture of this little fat kid, that was me, and Rob Pearson. It was just the coolest thing at that time. So that's kind of, you know, the moments that I really enjoyed while doing Tiny Talent Time was just meeting the kids and being able to give them that moment.
So you have a heart, is what you're trying to say.
Shh, damn it. Hope there aren't any Law fans listening. When they grow up, then they'll get the real dose of Agnew.
I mean, basically, he is what John Cena and the IWC wants John Cena to be. He's a good guy with the kids, but he's a heel to everyone else.
Yeah, there you go.
I've never even – maybe it's the asshole in me, but – ever since I've started listening to The Law, I've never really considered Jason Agnew as the quote-unquote asshole, because I feel like if I was in his position dealing with some of those callers, that it's natural for him to react the way he does, because it's just like, really? I've never considered, you know.
I think it's real, guys. I mean, there were years where, because the way the show developed is, you know, Dan was the lead on the show when I first started hosting. And then just as when we flipped over to TSN, just due to the fact that, you know, Dan's a better color guy than I am, right? Like, he's the colorful character and the mouth. He's got a nickname and stuff like that. And I'm the host. I host. That's my job. So we flipped the roles when we moved on to TSN. And I became the host to get in and out of break. And I started throwing stuff over to, you know, Dan, who's the character, and John, who's the brain. And there were, for years when I was, you know, the sidekick or the secondary co-host role, I would try to be nice to callers and, you know, and, oh, okay, that's cool. Well, that's your point. Thank you very much. And then it's like, well, that's not me. It's not what I really think. And if I don't think that, then guys like you sitting at home don't think that. And I find that when I listen to, don't get me wrong, he's my favorite guy to listen to, along with, you know, John and Way and Dave. But Brian Alvarez, when he does his call-in show on Wrestling Observer Live, there are times when I want to reach through my computer or iPod or whatever I'm listening on and strangle whatever caller that is on the air. I just can't handle it. And I'm like, Brian, why don't you hang up on this guy? And I've tweeted him a couple times saying, I can't believe you just kept going with that. And sometimes he does it on purpose because he's just like, well, I know that there's people at home thinking that. But, you know, if I get the same question or someone's clearly not listening, and I do this on the trivia show as well, which is very much a nicer Jason Agnew on Sunday mornings on the trivia show. But there's sometimes when people call in, I'm like, okay, what'd you call in? What do you want to play for? And they have no idea what the prizes are. All they heard was there's a prize. And they're calling. I'm like, no, you know what? You're a prize pig. And I hang up the phone.
So it's not just Americans then. I feel better.
No. There's definitely Canadians that are just prize pigs that call in. But last night I actually had a lot of trivia listeners out at my show. And there had to be three or four that came up to me and said, it's a pleasure to meet you. By the way, I love The Final Countdown. And that's the segment where I do hang up on people, is The Final Countdown. And they're like, I love when you hang up on people. It's so funny. I don't understand why they call, but it's so funny what you do. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's a part of it. It's trying to be that voice for the voiceless at home. I like that. Well, Heyman. Okay.
Well, speaking of the voice of the voiceless, how about let's talk about the jobless real quick here. And as you alluded to earlier, the political scene in Toronto is has taken the world by storm, and it's been on the hefty shoulders of that man called Rob Ford.
Yeah, those shoulders aren't that hefty anymore.
Oh, he's
can't make jokes about Rob Ford anymore. Yeah, I mean, the guy's going limits. Through cancer treatments now, right? So he's in real bad shape, apparently.
So what do you? How do you think this whole thing's going to play out? I guess, you know, his brother stepped in.
Yeah, I think I am under the impression that it's just not going to work. You know, Rob Ford had the whole blue collar man of the people thing that got him elected, and then just the buffoonery. And I don't know, the buffoonery would have been really close to get him elected again, but I don't think swapping in Doug is gonna work for them. And there is a gentleman named John Tory who's running for mayor who has a lot of experience, and he's just very level-headed. He is the absolute polar opposite. He's classy, he's level-headed, and I think he's what the city needs right now. This is really Olivia Chow, who would be the kind of the NDP-er, really dropped the ball on this. Like, all she had to do was come in here and be the least bit likable, and she would have got this mayoralship here, but it hasn't happened. John Tory stepped in. You know, he's right-wing. He's on the same side as Rob Ford, but he's just really classy and really level-headed, and I think he's just going to – after going through – elections, I think twice he's tried to be elected as mayor, and along with that, he's actually run for the provincial leadership as well, and failed on all three. He has a real knack for losing elections. I think this time around it's Tory time.
At the end of the day, isn't that what politics is? Is it's kind of like sports for less attractive people, because if you talk about, you know, whenever a manager gets fired, say he's the rah-rah coach, he's the rah-rah manager, they always switch and go to the tactician. Or if the guy's a player's coach, they go to the hard ass. You know, you always are reacting to what you had before, not necessarily going by policy. You know, pretty much like with Bush and Obama. Obama was a reaction to how bad George Bush screwed things up that we're actually going to elect a black guy because it can't get any worse.
Well, I don't necessarily think of that. Apparently, Nate, worse would have been a woman, according to the U.S., right? Because Hillary Clinton did not get in, and Obama did.
She might
did.
Be next. They're like, okay, enough this black guy. Let's go with the woman.
Well, I mean, here's something to relate it back. You know, you don't want what you just had. You don't want someone who seems like they're a replica. And let's look back to Hulk Hogan and Lex Luger, okay? And Hulk Hogan obviously was, you know, the huge star. And then when Luger was brought in to replace him, he's a muscly, bodybuilding, all-American guy, and they tried to do Hogan 2.0, and it failed miserably. You want something different the next time around. So I think maybe that – and I think that is part of it here in Toronto. We've had – the world's eyes on us due to Rob Ford. And personally, I have found it excessively entertaining. I, as someone who's in the media, who does comedy, I mean, it got too much, obviously. But man, I just watched this guy blunder his way through everything and thought it was hilarious. But now, okay, let's settle down. Let's put someone level-headed here. Let's get our transit in order. And this is the guy to do it.
Do you guys have the same election day as the states? Is it – when's your election day?
27th of October.
Okay, so 1 week before then. All right.
Yeah, so the states is in what, November?
November 4th, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so 27th of October. I mean, granted, this is just municipal is what we're doing here at the moment. We're not doing provincial. We're not doing provincial, not doing federal, just municipal because, you know, there has to be tons of levels of government.
If you're writing the Rob Ford – you know, movie. I mean, unfortunately, this is, I mean, going to be it looks like a sad chapter, but do you see a project in the future if, God forbid, he does, you know, pass away due to cancer? It just seems like this whole 12 to 18 month window has been fascinating. It would make a fascinating film of some sort.
Well, it's already in the works.
Oh, it is?
I mean, there was a book written on him, and it's already been optioned. So whether it's TV or an actual movie, yeah, I don't know, it's already happening.
Who would you like to see play Rob Ford then?
Oh, everyone would say Chris Farley, right? I mean, he was obviously the one, and this went around, of course, because those two, it's uncanny how those two would have worked. I don't know. I think you kind of have to go with an unknown, don't you think? Just to make it work. just find someone that really would be able to emulate him, because no one really comes to mind that would work in that role.
Because anybody else you'd put in there, it would almost be like an SNL sketch almost.
Yeah.
Know, they're playing a character instead of embodying the character of Rob Ford.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the – because obviously you want it to be one of the bigger guys that is out there. And who is it? Like a Will Sasso? You know, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's going to fail. Yeah.
Unfortunately, everybody that would have been really, really good in terms of a big name, you talk about Farley, I think Philip Seymour Hoffman could have pulled it off.
No, yeah, you know what? I could see that. That's a really good take on that, Nate. But not around anymore either.
They're all dead, is what you're saying, huh?
Yeah, they are indeed all passed away. I mean, that's what it's one of the weird things about comedy. And I have a friend here, actually, for listeners of this podcast who also watch Aftermath on the Score, or I guess Sportsnet 360 now in Canada. There's a gentleman on there named Nug Nargang, and you know, he's actually having a difficult time because for his own health he lost 200 pounds.
Wow.
And he's improviser and performer, and it's really now it's like, well, he's not the funny fat guy anymore. He's still funny, but he's not the funny fat guy. And you know, actors can really struggle with that when they completely change their look and feel. So he's having a hard time changing his roles around. And what do people cast him for now? Well, we don't know this Nug. We know the big fat Nug. Where's that Nug? So it's really tough that, you know, the performers in that, you know, body type feel pressured to stay large. And then you get into your John Candy's, John Belushi's, Chris Farley's. And granted, I'd say two out of three of those had extremely terrible coke problems. Well, you know, but they feel pressure to stay big in order to, you know, continue on with those roles.
Wow, that was a downer.
Oh, sorry, guys. we just went down.
And
we
David mentioned TNA, and you brought us down. Wow.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about TNA and the wonderful spectacle known as Bound for Glory.
Well, actually, since you mentioned TNA, I've been predicting TNA stuff since we started the show. And
at least 2 years now.
I'm getting closer and closer. Do you think we will have a TNA a year from now?
I don't know. I mean, here's the really interesting day is, I'm not sure. It's in November, I think, when all of what they've taped in Birmingham is done. And they don't have any other taping dates. And Spike TV has offered them the time slot, but they have nothing to put on it. And you can't put best ofs on it. That doesn't work for episodic television. They've announced no new deal. So what do they do? What do they do with those time slots to keep them going? So they look like they're just doomed at this point.
Nate, will you be okay if TNA dies in November?
Man, what are you going to call yourself?
I got a TNA just won't work anymore, so I've got
to go back to, what is it, Nate Mosaic, or is that what it is?
Maybe if this Lucha Underground thing takes off, I'll be Triple Nate.
Well, I don't think you should bank on that.
That looks just as awful. Oh man, did you see the trailer?
You bet I did. Yeah, we talked about it on the weekend on the Law as well, and I don't think it has legs to it.
You weren't intrigued by Sexy Star?
That was the one. That was the worst one. You know what, Nate? You mentioned her because they put her on there, and I guess her name's Sexy Star, and she's like, "I am Sexy Star." This might seem like it's something men should watch, but ladies, you should watch too. It's like, oh, can you? What? Jesus Christ! Did you borrow Hacksaw Jim Duggan's 2x4 to smack us over the head with what you're saying there? Like, do it. Don't say it. You know what? If you're going to get a female audience, then have a really great female protagonist to bring in that audience somehow. Saying, ladies, you should watch is like, you know, Ronda Rousey never went out and said, oh, by the way, I'm female and I'm going to fight and women, you should watch. But she just went out there and kicked ass, and that is what got women into it. And she's great.
The thing that turned me off the most about that that trailer was, I don't even remember the dude's name, but the evil owner.
Oh, like, that's terrible.
We got an evil Mexican owner now. I don't need the evil Mexican owner.
Yep, I completely agree with you. It's just a retread. And, you know, you have Vince and you have Stephanie, and it's just our Triple H now. It's like, is this evil owner going to be as good as either one of those? No. Why don't we try something different? I don't know what it is, but let's try something different.
Yeah, and Conan, shit, he looked old, man. I know it's probably after his surgery,
you know what?
But jeez.
I don't think that's a problem. That was the only thing I loved. I thought, okay, sure, he looked old, But there's something to be – you know what was great about that? Is Conan wasn't sitting there in baggy pants hopping around in a ring.
Yeah.
He reminded me of – do you remember the promo that they used to use Freddie Blassie for?
Yes.
Where he would sit there in his rocking chair with a cane in hand, and he would narrate. And Conan, sitting there with that cane, looking as old as he did, talking about his protege, was the only thing that I was like, I would like to see what they're doing with this. I like the fact that he wasn't doing olale or anything like that. They've completely changed him. He's changed. That was intriguing to me. That may have been where it began and ended, though.
Oh yeah, wrestling, well, and
we haven't even have something besides Double J's promotion. I mean, they at least have.
I was just gonna bring up GFW. Is it GFW?
Global Force.
I'm on the mailing list, and I've received one piece of mail from Global Force, and that piece of mail said, "Thank you for signing up to GFW's mailing list," and I have not received a single piece of correspondence since.
I'm clicking right now because I haven't been – the website still looks like something on GeoCities. It's gotten slightly better. But, I mean, if you go to globalforcewrestling.com and you look at the top right and the fact that it's like everything has a haze of green on it over top of all of the logos of Twitter, Facebook, it's a mistake is what it looks like. It's a mistake. And it's just out here. Oh, great. They got baseball caps now. I mean, I think my website looks comparable to this, and I got mine done for $400. You know what I mean? Like, it's just brutal, 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 and a terrible name, and a terrible logo, just stupid promos, terrible production value, and you know how I feel about terrible production value. So, anyhow, it just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. If it was, then why hasn't it happened yet?
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath for Double J. But since you mentioned wrestling, there was some wrestling news last night with Michael Elgin.
Leaving ROH, I hear.
Yeah.
I saw two things yesterday. I saw one, Michael Elgin's back on this date, and then two, Michael Elgin has announced on Twitter he's leaving the promotion.
Yeah, they seemed to announce that he would be wrestling over the weekend, and then he responded to them to directly on Twitter and said, no, I quit. So...
I mean, is it by chance an angle? How did he respond directly?
No, I don't think so, because he responded directly, so you would have to follow both ROH Wrestling Twitter account and Michael Elgin to even see it. So I think it might be legit, or really a poor...
I have no idea. I know that there were problems. That's obviously something we're going to touch on the weekend with the law and chat about that and see if we can get the story on it. But at this point, I don't know what the story is. I mean, I know that, there were problems. They were unhappy. That's why they had to pull the title off. I mean, it worked out. I mean, they were pulling the title off before they even knew about the immigration problems.
Yeah. So didn't he just get all that straightened out?
He just got home, yeah.
Yeah.
Finally.
Wow.
So there you go.
That's you can always find positive stories in the world of professional wrestling.
Yeah, it's been a pretty downer having me on, huh? It kind of peaked at Katy Perry.
Oh yeah, we should have quit while we were ahead. That's not what we do here.
Nope, but nope, we'll just bring it right down. Yeah. Our listeners are pulling out razor blades at this point.
Hey, we keep it real. So, Jason, you mentioned your $400 website. Tell people about that and some of the other products you got going, where they can follow you and listen to you and hear some of your angriness, and also see you sell Tyson Chicken. How can they see all that good stuff?
All the commercials I do are all posted on my website at jasonagnew.com. But a lot of it's just, self-whoring, really. I put it at the bottom of my email when I apply for jobs. So, when some employer clicks on it and goes, oh, yeah, that guy. But, I mean, for the wrestling stuff, it's liveaudiowrestling.com is, a great site to go to. Nate, you're, of course, on one of our podcasts. It would be every Thursday, you can find the podcast that Nate is on with Review and Impact. And Braden Harrington, our junior guy who's just getting into the world of wrestling and podcasting, and our operator on the show, and I do a show called What's Next, which is all about NXT, which continues to be my favorite product of the week each week. Even when there's episode.
Is that the only bright light right now in the industry in terms of a broadcast product?
I enjoy it. I mean, I watch it every week, and it's got a certain charm to it. And, you know, this is where you get to see Kenta now. And then, you know, Prince Devitt's on his way in, and waiting to see what happens with Kevin Steen. And they're all going to go there first. So it's refreshing. It has its ups and downs.
And it's 1 hour. That's key.
And it's 1 hour. It's 1 hour, and that is all and enough, and it leaves me wanting more. And that is something that wrestling companies have to learn, that if you leave your audience wanting more, that's a good thing.
No, we got to make time for Hoda Lee.
Hoda Kotb.
Hoda Kotb and Kathy Lee.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
I didn't stick the landing on that one at all.
That's quite all right, neither. Well, I guess she did, falling back into the... the pool of rosebuds.
Yes, yes, yes. So, Jay, thank you for spending some time with us, man. A pleasure as always. You got an open invite in the future. I think now we've got 3 out of 4 of our law trading set complete.
You need Lavransky.
We just got to get the mouth.
Well, what you need to do for Dan Lavransky, the best way to communicate with him is you get 2 tin cans and a really long string. The man without a cell phone.
I was going to send a carrier pigeon.
Carrier pigeon, yeah, that could work. Twitter, I think that's what he thinks Twitter is because it has a bird logo.
Oh, we love Mouth.
Oh, we do. We do indeed. He has his chart. Listen, I have to say, speaking about loving Mouth, we got the chance to go to the Hamilton Comic Con this past weekend. Dan Lavransky has... He's very Dan is a super nice guy. He'll give you the shirt off his back, and I've worked with him, of course, for 15 years now. He bonds with wrestlers from the, you know, that 80s region, like we're talking about Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Honky Tonk Man. I think he is Fred Ottman's new best friend. And he had the chance to chat with all those guys. And at the Hamilton Comic Con, we got some great interviews coming up on Live Audio Wrestling. We talked to Shockmaster about Shockmaster. All right. Do I have to say more, guys? So those are all coming up in the next 6 weeks or so, because Dan talked to everybody there and was just great interviews that are coming up on the law.
So no, nice. No Ric Flair incidents.
No Ric Flair. Around. No Ric Flair incidents this time. No. They're all more so like the Killer Bees. I mean, that's what he does. He went to the Killer Bees, and he got to put the mask on and the jacket on. He went to talk to Shockmaster, and Fred Ottman gave him the helmet to put on. So he really just goes and like wears costumes from the 80s while he talks to these dudes. Good gimmick for him.
Nice. We will be looking forward to that. And again, have a fun this weekend watching Bound for Glory.
Well, we're going to talk to you right after that. Right, Nate?
Yeah. I'll call in. I will tell you the one thing, and maybe this is an indictment of this whole entire fiasco, is I am excited. And I told Marcus when he sent me the card, I was like, Kaz Hayashi? My interest, I marked for Kaz Hayashi, and I haven't seen this man wrestle in at least a decade. So that should tell you, you know, my expectations for this show.
Well, we'll see how it goes, and I guess we'll talk to you just after that event.
Yeah, so that could be my final appearance as TNA. I might just retire from the podcast, retire from calling in.
No, you won't. You'll be there. You'll be like Steen and Flair. You'll be in the ring to the very end, saying your
goodbyes. Listen, guys, I'll leave you with this. One thing that I always say, no matter how down your life gets, or whatever goes on outside of this world, wrestling is the lady that never leaves you.
Very true.
Very true. Very, very true.
She's a lady who's not putting out right now, but she's still around. It's been a little dried up.
And on that note, again, thanks, Jay. We'll holler at you down the road, my friend.
Sounds good, guys. Talk to you later.
All right. That is Jason Agnew. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back with segment 4 right after this.
With its teeth there, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, where's old Maggie Heath there? So there's never a trace of red. Oh, Sunday morning.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nate holding things down, getting ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, you know we got to give you what you want. We got to give you what you need and what you overwhelmingly say that you want and need from the Kings of Sport is ratchetness. And we like to look and find ratchetness wherever it may be hiding, whether it's in the world of sports, pop culture, entertainment, social media, wherever it may be. And we talk about it in a segment called Segment 4. And then, Marcus, we have a very interesting story to talk about this week.
We do. I came across this story somewhere on my Facebook page, probably Way Team. It's about a new dating website that is targeted for wrestling fans. It's called tagmeadate.com. It's launching next Tuesday, October 14th. And it's going to be your chance, guys. All you wrestling fans out there listening who are wondering, how do I meet that special someone who shares my special bond with professional wrestling? Well, this is your opportunity to find someone. You thought Jason Agnew was an asshole. Wait to don't get me started on this site. And just if you sign up for this site and you listen to the show, stop listening to our show.
Stop listening. Yeah. Full disclosure, this is just sad. But on the other hand, Marcus, being the opportunist that I am, you know, I'm like a C-level internet wrestling commentator, opinion giver. I could probably score some Marquette tail on this, man.
Don't tell me you're going to sign up for this.
I'm looking at the site right now, tagmeadate.com. Now wrestling night is date night. Early registration has been extended to October 14th, and it is free until February 1st, which seems like a pretty long window.
A very long window.
This is the part that gets me. Have you actually clicked on the site, Mark?
Yeah, I'm on it now.
Okay. The part that gets me is... this brings back memories of every E-Fed that I was in the 90s, and yes, I was an E-Fedder. I wasn't like three or four E-Feds, but there was one really good Fed that I was in the late 90s. But the first step to registering for tagmeadate.com, Marcus, is creating your wrestling name. That's where we're starting. We're kayfabing romance, brother.
That's the best kind of romance.
Just be careful when it turns into a shoot.
Yeah, oh yeah, those word sheets, man. gotta look out.
Oh, let me see. Like, let's experiment, Marcus. Let's do some live experimentation. I'm going to sign up. I'm not actually going to sign up like with my real info, but I'm just going to sign up and because I want to see because they've got pricing levels, but you can't see. Oh, wait,
yes, you can. Yeah, it's pricing.
I was going to say you can't see pricing until you sign in, but you can. So let's look at the prices, Marcus. What would you be willing to pay for tagmeadate.com? Well, not what would you be willing to pay?
I was about to say $0.
What would the average mark be willing to pay for Tag Me a Date, do you think?
$9.99, of course.
You'd think that. But 1 month at tagmeadate.com, a.k.a. TMD, as they call themselves. You can sign up, Marcus, for the Lightweight Champion Package for $39.95 a month plus tax.
A month?
A month. 1 month, $40. The price of a New Japan pay-per-view.
$40?
For 1 month at the lightweight champion level. But wait, there's more. You could sign up at the middleweight champion level for just $79.99 for 3 months. That's $26 a month, Marcus. That's a better value.
Hmm. Their price structure is already better than the WWE Network, because I think they want you to sign up for a long term commitment and will take your money short term, but they ultimately want you to lock in for a full year from the jump. So
yeah, well, if you do 6 months at the cruiserweight champion level, it's only $112, Marcus, $18 a month. Or if you want to be a main eventer and sign up for the Tag Me a Date Heavyweight Champion Package, that is one full year of tagmeadate.com, it's only $149, Marcus, plus tax. So $12.50 a month for a year of romance and hookups at tagmeadate.com.
So I'll give them credit for their pricing strategy. So I see what they're going for here. But $40 though. That's a steep investment just to check out the product. I guess it's free until February, so you can check it out until then.
Yeah, it is apparently free until February 1st, which is smart. Like, much like the network programmed towards WrestleMania, they're programming towards Valentine's Day.
They are.
They're like, you got to pay for this, man.
Well, you get the Rumble. You can at least bond over the Royal Rumble, and then you can decide where your future takes you after that.
Oh, man, this is... we should have talked to Agnew about this, and maybe next time we talk to Sierra, we'll have to ask her about this. Because I like to hear a female who's also a wrestling fan's perspective of a site such as this.
Well, the guy who founded it, Stephen Glenwick, I guess he gave an interview to Manhattan Digest. Quote, the basic concept of this site is to connect people that share a similar passion of professional wrestling. I, along with the rest of my employees, have been lifelong wrestling fans. This is our main passion, and we are quite proud of that. I've been fortunate enough to meet the woman that would be later be my wife and learn on the first date that she was a wrestling fan. I want the same thing for all single wrestling fans. There's a lot of them. How great would it be to find someone that shares that very same passion?
I mean, in concept, it's not a bad idea, because you can bond over, you know, shared interest. But I don't think this site is going to help the stereotypical reputation of most wrestling fans.
Not at all. I don't know many female wrestling fans. I can think of a couple casual fans, but none that are, like, super serious about it, so.
Like, this can't be, like, being a wrestling fan can be, you know, number 4 or 5 on the list of things that you say. Like, it can't be the lead story.
It can't be the top. Your identity is, I'm a wrestling fan. That's the problem.
Like, this, if this was 96, 95, something like that, a site like this would take off, because wrestling was so much more mainstream. But now it's like, what are you going to talk about? Like, man, it sucks what's happened with the Bullet Club girl.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I will say this, though, for Tag Me a Date, tagmeadate.com. I already like them more than I like Farmers Only, and that's just because I hate those commercials.
Oh, but the theme song is great.
Farmers Only?
Yeah, it's catchy.
The theme song may
you
be
don't
catchy.
You have to be lonely. FarmersOnly.com.
But the what
it's,
they're
it's
saying
better than BlackPeopleMeet.com. Come on, you seen
this
that one, right?
This is how black people meet.
Nah, they don't meet that way. We don't meet on the internet. We meet out in the streets.
What are you talking about, man? Black Planet was the deal back in like 2002.
I never got into the whole Black Planet.
Black Planet was a big thing back in the, like, I would say per capita, there were probably at its peak, there were probably more black people on blackplanet.com than were on MySpace at
easily. Yeah.
Like, Black Planet was like a, this is how like a site just kind of got flipped, cuz I guess at the beginning it was a purely social, it was like the Black Facebook. Even though, was Facebook around then?
No, it's just
it's pre-Facebook.
Pre-Facebook.
Yeah, so Black Planet was kind of like a predecessor to Facebook, but about 2 months in, it turned into Black Hookup. Hey, girl, I see you go to Morgan State. I'm going to be in the area. Why don't you holler at your boy?
And this is how you know it went sideways. The guy who started it has a PhD. His intention was never for Black Planet just to be a hookup
BlackMatch.com, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't his intention. But hey, when you give us, you know, a little control, a little access, we tend to take over.
Oh, Black Planet. And I'm going to tell you what, some of y'all may not want to hear this, but the people that was making a killing on BlackPlanet.com, white girls. White girls and girls with a little bit of something quote-unquote exotic.
Yeah.
I'm Indian. I'm Spanish. My father is Japanese. What that got to do with you? But yeah, if you had a hook, if you had a gimmick, you were good on Black Planet, which kind of, I guess, brings us back to Tag Me a Date. Are people going to have gimmicks on this site, Marcus?
Oh, man.
Are people going to have heel turns? Like, if you break up with somebody you met on Tag Me a Date?
That's when you shoot on them. You have to shoot, rant or message board post on the relationship, and you break kayfabe, you tell what happened, and oh boy,
like, I think these dates could go well in on the cybersphere, but when it comes to real life and these women are dating these marks, and they're like, hi, my name's Jimmy, what's your name? Well, hi, my, it doesn't matter what your name is. Like, that's what you're going to have to deal with.
Just doing a, like, pop. Not just all doing a pop for the boys. You're not going to try to get the women. You just try to mark out your fellas on the
yeah,
site.
Like, not all wrestling fans are like this, but enough wrestling fans are like that.
Yeah,
enough to make this site.
The ones who are signing up for the site are. That I should say that.
But yeah, man. I'm just saying, though, with Farmers Only, something about, man, finally, we're meeting people just like us.
You don't have to be lonely.
I'm glad I can finally meet somebody who shares my sensibilities. So what you're saying is you don't, Geno Smith should not apply to FarmersOnly.com.
He did do it at West Virginia. I mean.
Yeah. West Virginia had a run of black quarterbacks for a minute.
They Pat White. Farms out there.
Oh, but yeah. Do you see this thing succeeding? Like, I what's the guy's name? Glenn Wickey?
Steve Dunwick. We probably should try to track him down and have him on the show and just...
Like, is this his first venture? This can't be his first venture. Like,
it's about to be his last venture.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Tag Me a Date. This is not where you start. This is where you end. I would love to hear from anybody that signs up to tagmeadate.com. Any of our listening audience.
Yes, please. We will have you on the show. If you sign up for this site, we will bring you on the show to discuss it.
Yeah, this is, and I bet you, like, there's gonna be some sort of, you remember Mark Henry when China set him up with that girl, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
There's gonna be some of that going on.
Oh yeah.
There's gonna be swerves. Boy.
There's gonna be a lot of catfishing going on.
Nothing but catfishing. Yeah. Like, catfish could do a whole season on Tag Me a Date.
It could.
Like, Dan Neve. I've been talking with Samantha for 6 months now, and we both love the Wyatt family. But for some reason, she only has one picture. This is the question. Because you know how some sites, like, what's the one? The Christian date site was like, this will be.
Oh, yeah.
Christian Mingle?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know how Christian Mingle doesn't allow same-sex couples
mm-hmm.
on the site? Would Tag Me a Date have policies like that?
I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a match of reading the interview. They asked the question, is your site gay friendly or is it just for straight people? Our site does not discriminate in any way. We offer people the ability to find people, whether they are the opposite sets or the same sets. Our goal is to make sure wrestling fans find their tag team soulmates and get to share their passion for wrestling with another.
Tag team soulmates.
Billy and Chuck are cool on the site.
Yeah, Billy and Chuck are cool. But if you do have a guy hit up another guy, will they say he's playing mind games?
No. Good point.
He's playing mind games on Tag Me a Date. Will Darren Young be available?
He's got someone, I think.
Oh, really? Oh, good for you, Darren. Good for you. Who is, like, ridiculously jacked now for some reason.
Yeah.
But this is just crazy. Like, Tag Me a Date. Like, this... Like, I don't know about you, Marcus. I don't know what your experience is with online dating or stuff like that. But
I don't have any.
I was going to say, I've had some experience. Obviously, that's how I met my ex in Canada. Like, I didn't meet her down here. But it's interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's... I'm trying to think. Well, like, way back in the day, like the AOL days, you had like...
You was on AOL chat rooms?
Yeah.
The Hey Girl,
ASL.
Oh man, that was a documentary I pitched to I don't know why I pitched it to my ex when we were still dating, because it wasn't like she was working for a production company or something, but I was like, we should have done a documentary on online dating, and like we'd be one of the subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be called Computer Love, just because I wanted to have that song in the documentary.
Hodgins up, yeah.
Yeah, Computer Love. Is that your face I see on my computer screen? it's just crazy. Like, I don't know. I don't know whether this is something that's commendable, because I guess, you know, everything's a niche product nowadays, or if it's just something that... It seems to me like a setup for a lot of... A lot of broken hearts and a lot of hurt feelings.
And just a lot of men in general. I mean, what's the ratio?
A lot of dudes. Because, you know, that's the one thing about, like, your average dating site. There's more women than men, which is interesting. But with something like this, just due to the demographics of wrestling fans, you know, you're probably going to have, what, a 4-to-1 ratio? 5-to-1? Guys to girls?
Oh, I see 80-20, at least 90-10 maybe.
So the pool is so small, and you got all these guys. And let's be real about it. Them 20% are not all going to be dime pieces.
Oh, not at all.
The 20%, they're not all going to be Rihanna's.
But if you, self-esteem-wise, you're going to feel great because you're going to have all these men coming after you. So it'll help you boost up your ego, but...
This would be an interesting, like, social experiment. Like, if you just get, like, a girl and a guy that are not actually looking for somebody, just go on the site and just see what's going on, the interactions.
Listen, if you want to meet a wrestling fan, go to a live event. Meet someone at a show. At least verify that they're a real person.
Instead of like sending somebody a message or a wink or something like that, do you hit a button and cut a promo on them? Hey, let me tell you something, girl. I saw the way you looked in that Hulkamania t-shirt, and I felt a special feeling I haven't felt in years. I'm calling you out to the Applebee's in Brooklyn this Sunday. All you can eat.
Yeah.
Oh, this is gonna end badly, Marcus.
It is.
So yeah, let's see if we can talk to what's the dude's name again?
Steven Glenwick.
Let's see if he's still doing media, and we can holler at him before this thing goes sideways.
Okay.
Because this I don't think this is gonna end well, man. Tag Me a Date. So yeah, if anybody is gonna sign up for one of those platinum packages or just does the free thing until February, let us know, because I'm intrigued. Like, I'm almost inclined to create a fake profile, but just morally, that's wrong.
No, not if you're. You can sign up for one. Just don't reach out. Just observe, just to see what the.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I don't have to talk to anybody. Yeah.
I'm not signing up.
I can swear somebody just post a picture of Lita and these marks will believe it. Then I'll reveal it was a black man. It was me all along. Cena fan 3614.
Said Rikishi and The Rock. Or it was Rikishi and Austin.
Yeah, so I did it for The Rock.
I did it for The Rock. I did it for the podcast.
Be like, why did you? No, I'm not going to do that. That's why I'm not going to join this site, Marcus, because I censor myself. Like, I had a line I was going, and I'm like, you know what? Let's not go there.
All right.
Speaking of going there, though, real quick before we end off today's show, have you seen the latest iTunes sensation, which ties into wrestling?
No.
I got sent this link the other day.
Wait, is it Michael Hayes?
No, not Michael Hayes, who is coming out with an album. Brian Christopher, a.k.a. Grandmaster Sexy.
Oh, no.
Is putting out a record called, wait for it, Bringing Sexy Back.
See, we talked about Scotty Too Hotty last weekend, his Disney fandom.
Yeah.
I'd rather be the Disney boy than Grandmaster Sexy putting out albums.
Let me see if I can send you this thing right quick. But yeah, it's funny because he's not even singing. He's just, you know how he's got like the kind of the gravelly voice?
Mm-hmm.
Like he's talking through these songs, and then some songs are like original compositions, but others are like parodies. Like he's got one called Jabroni, which is a parody of Elvis's Hound Dog. And he's like, "You ain't nothing but a jabroni. You're losing all the time.
Oh boy.
You ain't never got a paycheck. You ain't no main eventer of mine." I'm like, whoa. Oh, he does have a song with his dad, though. So I guess relationships are cool.
With the King?
Yeah, with the King on a song called Puppies.
Of figures.
Yeah. But yeah, holy. Brian Christopher's country rap album, Bringing Sexy Back. Available on iTunes right now.
Wow.
Like, yeah, you can literally go on iTunes right now. I'm going to send you this link right quick, Mark, so you can check it out. But while I'm looking this up, you said you had a chance to listen to the show the show from 2 weeks ago. Did you take some time this week to look up Song of the South?
I did not. No, I'm going to actually try to seek out the entire film.
It is, it is ridiculous. Like the people are like, "Why you keep talking about this?" Like you have to see Song of the South. Like it, I've seen it the complete movie start to finish maybe twice in my entire lifetime, but like you don't forget Song of the South. And it's funny because, like, when you're a kid, you don't really catch a lot of the stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just like, "Oh, this is, you know, he's Brer Rabbit, and he's a fun rabbit, and he's telling a story." But then it's like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you've ruined Space Mountain. Splash Mountain for me. Forever.
Splash Mountain, yeah. Now, Ric Flair ruined Space Mountain.
Yeah.
It might be the oldest ride in the park, but it's still got the longest line. And you can find it at tagmeadate.com. Yeah, maybe I sent you the link. Maybe we'll have to do a review of the album just based on the clips, like next week or something. Just,
yeah, Brian didn't get my money.
Yeah, I'm not paying $9.99 for the complete Grandmaster Sexy album. We'll just listen to the clips. If you like, man, that 10 seconds was good. Who was it? PG-13, Wolfie, and Jamie.
Yeah.
He could have brought them back and had a whole reunion. Like, that's the caliber of people you're going to see on Tag Me a Date. It's not going to be the Rocks of the world. It's going to be the PG-13.
Well, what's going to happen? I think the former, like, what about the indie wrestler? Would the indie wrestler jump to the head of the pack against the quote-unquote fan?
In on Tag Me a Date?
Yeah, did you think if you're gonna date a wrestling fan, you might as well date a worker?
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, you're right about that. You should have just called the site ringrats.com.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it's gonna be.
Like, do you want to bang an indie worker? Don't feel like driving? Want something you can arrange in a weekend?
Yeah.
Here's your chance. Yeah, that is tough though, because like if you're, let's say you're at Joe Raw fan, and you're a little overweight, yeah, you might not have had a best career, and you out here on Tag Me a Date killing it, like you were the most interesting man on Tag Me a Date. Then all of a sudden, let's just say, who's a indie worker? Let's say Matt Cross shows up,
yeah,
and Matt Cross takes all of your thunder and all of the women. Like, that's got to hurt. Like, if you can't find love on Tag Me a Date, you might just want to tap out.
Well, it's going to hurt more because that guy's going to want to talk to Matt Cross. So,
yeah, because he can't even really be mad at Matt Cross for stealing his girl.
Not at all.
Like, you know what, though? We're going to have, like, some real-life edge leader situations happen on this site. Yeah, man, Tag Me a Date. This is going to end badly, but it should be an entertaining, unlike TNA, it should be an entertaining train wreck. TNA's are just sad. like that'll be funny though. Like, will workers actually sign up for this site?
I bet you they will. I bet you someone will.
It's a good way to get booked.
Yeah.
That could be somebody's gimmick. Mr. Tag Me a Date. Like, he just meets chicks on Tag Me a Date and starts feuds, and that's his whole gimmick and persona. Like, you remember, what was it? WCW had the York Foundation with the computerized man, Terry Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Tag Me a Date dude would just come out with his laptop and just be looking up women during the match.
Don't give Vince any ideas.
Tag Me a Date. That's a great idea.
if my Stephanie McMahon interview ever happens, I think I need to ask her about this site. Just as a woman who is also a wrestling fan, would she, you know, assuming she wasn't married and stuff, would she ever dabble in the TagMeADate.com world?
She would need to though, because if she brought it to data worker, she's got like she owns the keys to the grocery store.
Yeah, but maybe you don't want to date. We may just want to date a fan. You don't want to date a worker.
Would Stephanie really want to date a fan?
No, probably not.
He'd be quoting Rock and Jericho lines to her all night.
Yeah,
you know, Stephanie, when we first met, I thought you was a gutter feeding, disgusting trash bag hoe, but you're actually quite nice. Had a lovely time. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be our next, our next interview we got to track down. Like, I'm all in for Stephen
Glenwick.
Glenwick. I was about to call him Klawicki. I don't know. Stephen Glenwick, who you think he could work a better name, though.
That's his shoot name.
Like, it's a shoot, brother.
Yeah.
Like, the icon, Steve Glenwick. Psycho Steve Glenwick. Oh, yeah. Tag Me a Date. Yeah, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. We're going to talk to this man, and I want to know if any nuptials, not just Nookie, I want to feel relationships form from Tag Me a Date.
I'm sure there'll be one at least.
I that's a good thing. That's a good place to end things off this week, Marcus. Yeah, that's, you know, Agnew brought us down last segment, but Steve Glenwick has brought us up, lifted our spirits. TagMeADate.com. This might be the most promotion they're ever going to get.
Yeah.
Ever. Maybe this is Global Force Wrestling.
It's all a swerve. It's all just a dating site.
Yeah, maybe Jeff Jarrett is Steve Glenwick. Hi, I'm Steve Glenwick. You want a date? I got a database with over 1,400 available bachelors and bachelorettes.
It's a massive database.
All right. So, Marcus, where can the people hit you up to follow you and see your insightful commentary on Twitter and maybe ask you some questions about Tag Me a Date?
If you want to find a world woman, how to find, you know, ladies without diving on a message board or a wrestling site, Twitter, Instagram, Marco Will, MarcoWill.
I wonder if you get theme music on this site. You know, that'd be a cool little thing.
Yeah.
Set them apart. You get like theme music. You click on somebody's profile, it'd be like some dude is 60 pounds overweight, and you got the Shawn Michaels. I'm just a sexy boy. No, you're not.
Yeah.
You're not. And you're neither a boy nor sexy. You're 45 years old and you're 365 pounds. But if you would like to talk to me, hear my insight, you know, I'm on Twitter every now and then. I don't tweet as much as I used to, but when I do, I make it count. You can follow me at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show at KOSPOD, KOS_POD on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Join the group and engage in the discussions. Like, rate, and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Share the show with your friends if you enjoy what we do. Don't keep it a secret. Let people know. Maybe we'll start a service, Marcus. I'm trying to think. We'll call it King's Connection.
With a K.
Well, yes, with a K. King's Connection. If you like listening to the Kings of Sport, we'll find you a woman that likes listening to the Kings of Sport, and we'll let love blossom.
Are we sure the woman listens to the show?
I'm not sure. I know at least one woman listens to the show that is not related to either one of us.
Sierra?
Two counting Sierra. Yeah, I know one other friend of mine, but two counting Sierra.
All right.
So we got two women for all you guys out there. I mean, the odds are pretty high, but you know.
Sorry, Sierra.
Maybe that could be how we can start to finally generate some income around here. We'll start, we'll get like, you can be you'll start off with a page program, and then you can be a squire, maybe a knight. And for only $100 a year, you can be a king.
Nah, just a joker.
Just a joker. but it's, I tell you what though, it'd still be better than farmersonly.com. Cause we like everybody.
I'm not going to see it again.
I'll see if we can go to that well one more time.
Nah, we have to start paying rights fees if I keep singing the song.
yeah. So that's going to do it for this week on the Kings of Sport. Another fun week. Again, shout out to Jason Agnew. You can go to jasonagnew.com. Check out all that he's involved in. Friend of the program. Thanks for stopping by the show. Next week, I have no idea who we'll be talking to or what we'll be talking about. But whatever we're going to do, we're going to make it fun, and it's going to be informative and opinionated because that's what we do around here. So unless you got anything else, Marcus, I think you need to go get ready for the big reveal next week.
Yeah, that didn't work. So, yeah, that's it.
Who is Marcus Vandenberg? Find out next week.
Find out which European decided to...
I'm sure slavery's going to come up.
Some dirty deeds on my ancestors.
What's the over-under on slavery coming up in Marcus's ancestry?
100%.
I'll take those odds. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, if that is your real name, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.